Blog Talk Radio.
Figure 16 games played, 17 weeks. We're at week 5 going into week 6. We're right on the cusp of being a third through the season. Seemed like just yesterday that we were starting our upcoming season. It was summertime. It was warm out. You know, we were doing the show. We were getting ready for football. Preseason games were coming. Training camp. We were getting excited. Are you still excited? How's your team doing? I'm still excited. But it's October now. The days are getting shorter. It's cold out. Well, it's not brutally cold, but it's certainly colder than it was when we started. Anyway, we got a lot to talk about tonight. What a week. What a week in the NFL. And I cannot and will not do this alone. Although I can't do this alone. I'd prefer not to. I did do a show Friday at noon, and it was received very well. So I want to thank everybody for their support. Just wanted to try something different. You know, just said, hey, you know, I'm subscribed to a lot of different podcasts, and some of them are a little more frequent than us. So I said, let me see what's out there during the day and who's interested in hearing about football on a Friday. And it worked out good. You know, I don't know if I'll do it again. Maybe we'll do one this Friday, maybe not. But I'd prefer to have my colleagues in crime with me. You know, it's much more fun to have this guy, Dr. Train. Now, we know him as Dr. Train. I know him as EAFL Super Bowl I winner and a man who is very analytical, and he's going to have some interesting stuff to talk about in a little bit with Dr. Train's philosophy. But the man with the PhD, the man with the Bears at 4-1, he joins us tonight. Dr. Train, welcome to the Madden Voice.
What up, T, man? I can't explain you how tired and excited I am all at the same time.
Well, good to have you on the show. We also have the Madden man himself, the guy who was on Madden Nation Season 4, one of the top Madden players in the country year after year. He goes by Ali Quick, resident of Indianapolis, but we know him as K-Star. Welcome to the Madden Voice.
What's going on, fellas?
Hey.
Glad to be here this evening. Cannot wait to discuss these very important football matters with both of you gentlemen and to all the viewers out there.
It's getting real. It's getting real. I mean, if you're not a football person, you're still going to like the show because these topics are getting real. I mean, if you happen to like football, then, hey, batten down the hatches and get ready. But if you're just kind of a sports guy trolling around the internet looking for some entertainment, you're going to get entertained tonight, I can assure you. Now, one of my co-hosts has some background noise going on, so if they can do something about that, that would be very helpful. And while they're doing that, I do want to kind of say to the listeners that I love when we do our show, and then later in the week I hear things from our show on network TV. You know what I'm saying? Like we do this as fans, as certainly adjunct media, you know, like we're not compensated to do this, but we are a part of the media, you know, we are. And I consider us just like you go to college and you have your professors and then you have your adjunct faculty, right? I consider us adjunct media, and I made that term up. So if you hear that out there, it's from Commissioner T. I made that up. Made that up just now, as a matter of fact. And it was a couple things that we talked about on the Madden Voice, and I'm listening to some of the other shows out there as I do. And man, oh man, and there were several. I only can remember two. But during the week, I was like, man, this, we talked about that. And man, we said that, you know. And one of them was we talked about the Browns and the upset potential. Now, obviously, we know the Browns did not do it. But for a minute, if you listened to the Madden Voice and you heard us talk about the potential and then you saw that it was 14-0, you had to say, somebody on that show knew what they were talking about. Because the potential was definitely there. Well, you know, I'm watching all the pregame shows, and that's all I'm hearing all day Sunday is, you know, upset alert, Browns over the Giants. And I'm like, we talked about that 5 days ago. The other thing is, I personally made a comparison to Vince Young with Cam Newton. I myself said that, you know, intellectually, mentally, there just seemed to be a lot of the Vince Young factor creeping into this guy. We're going to talk about Cam Newton in a little bit. But and I'm watching First Take, and my good friend Stephen A. Smith said the exact same thing. Now, I'm not trying to say that Stephen A. listens to the Madden Voice. I'm not saying that at all, but you never know.
His producers might be trying to feed for some new material. They might be, you know, just trying to latch on to us. It wouldn't surprise me at all. Wouldn't surprise the quality of the panel that we have here. Wouldn't surprise me one bit.
K-Star, I tell you, you weren't with the Madden Voice back when we had Dwight Freeney on, but me and Train interviewed Dwight Freeney.
I was on the show, though. I actually was on that show.
Okay. And Train asked him a very good question about the 18-game schedule that had been proposed and, you know, what he thought about that. And Freeney had some very pointed comments against the 18-game schedule. And it was even put on Blog Talk, like right on their homepage, Dwight Freeney's face and his comments of, no, I don't want an 18-game schedule. And I was watching ESPN, either the next day or the day after, I think it was the next day, and they said in a recent interview, Dwight Freeney was quoted as saying he was against the 18-game schedule. Now, I'm sure if he said it on our show, it's possibly could have said it somewhere else, but I just thought it was weird that, you know, that it was verbatim the same stuff that came off of our show and was quoted on the Blog Talk Radio homepage. So anything's possible. Anything's possible. Anyway, let's jump right into our segments, and let's start it off with K-Star, who is a resident of Indianapolis, and K-Star, and we used to call this K-Star's Madden Minute, and we've so devoted ourselves to football. I mean, we do discuss Madden when there's something to talk about, when the new game comes out, or, you know, there's some issues. You know, we will talk Madden, but we're just, you know, football is just so dominating our topic. So instead of it being K-Star's Madden Minute, it's going to be K-Star's Minute to Shine. So, K-Star, you're on.
First of all, I'm always shining, so it's not just a minute. This show, I believe, is 120 minutes, so you get 120 minutes of that. But nonetheless,
you get the solo dolo minute.
So here we go. Being a resident of Indianapolis, we all saw what we saw this past Sunday. The Indianapolis Colts defeated the Green Bay Packers, and you actually heard that be a potential upset special a week ago in the show. I'm not going to name any names, but, I mean, it's pretty apparent, you know, who would give that kind of intellectual breakdown of what could possibly go down the following Sunday, something like a prophet, and you know who that would be. But nonetheless, you know, the Andrew Luck jerseys are selling like hotcakes. They are the most sought-after item in Indianapolis. And it was weird because in week one, you know, we saw what Peyton Manning on play Sunday Night Football against my Pittsburgh Steelers. And I was noting how many upon many bars were featuring that, not just as a game, like, you know, hey, guys, come to the Britain Tavern, Indianapolis' own, to see the Sunday Night Football game. No. They were headlining it as if it were a Colts game in to a degree. They were headlining it as if Peyton Manning still wore a blue and white Indianapolis Colts decal helmet. Times have changed in just a little bit over a month. This past Sunday, we saw the Andrew Luck-led Indianapolis Colts defeat the legacy of the Green Bay Packers, and Andrew Luck was a superstar. Andrew Luck is playing in a completely unreal level right now. When you look at the deficiencies of his offensive line, and you look at how already 5 games into his career, that actually four, he had a bye week, 4 games into his career, he already has a staple. He already has that staple of signature game on his resume, speaks volumes about what kind of future this man has in the NFL. Now, Indianapolis had an identity crisis a few weeks ago. Now, again, you know, only thing people can talk about is Andrew Luck this, Andrew Luck that. Did you see Andrew Luck? Did you see the Colts on Sunday? Like, the man has made people forget about Peyton Manning already, which is pretty hard to do considering Peyton Manning is always in the national spotlight. But he is that damn good. And I don't think, and I was wondering about this out loud, was this just, you know, Andrew Luck and the Colts seizing on emotional opportunity, or is there something more to it? And to me, there's something more to that, because when you look at Andrew Luck, when you look at the first pick player picked overall in the NFL draft, there's a reason why this guy was picked ahead of an ultra super talent ahead of RG3. There's a reason why this kid for years in Stanford was touted as the best prospect since John Elway, since Peyton Manning himself. And this kid, 4 games into his career, is delivering. And again, he's already given you a staple game. And also, I want to point out a very important statistic that a lot of people don't reference and need to reference more is the ESPN QBR. And Andrew Luck, if you look at it in the NFL QBR, is actually fourth on my list. I'm sorry, third on that list. And the reason is because, again,
He's fourth.
That was right the first time? Okay.
Yeah.
The kid is fourth, and it's because, again, the QBR takes a whole bunch of factors into it. I'm not going to really explain it right now how it works, but just know that it's QB rating with clutch rating, with offensive line deficiencies, with third down conversion, stuff of that magnitude. And the kid's delivered. For him to average over 300 yards passing a game kind of speaks volumes about his level of ability and his importance already to the NFL. But there's a superstar here, and he's arrived, and he came to your living room this Sunday, and his name is Andrew Luck, and Aaron Rodgers, the Green Bay Packers, are already all too familiar. And I don't believe this was a fluke. No. I believe this is just the start of something spectacular. And, again, I'm just excited to see the kid play. Every Sunday, I think everyone's going to start tuning in and say, hey, how's that Andrew Luck kid doing? Because that kid's pretty damn good.
Train, you want to say something? Here we go again. I feel like the doggone debate. Did y'all see the debate last week? I don't even want to talk about it, man. I don't even want to talk about it. But I feel like the debate. I feel like saying to K-Star, there you go again, right? Ronald Reagan, right? K-Star, this is a year ago, K-Star standing up there saying he's putting Cam Newton in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And now where are we? It's just early. It's just a little early to, as Bill Parcells said, put away the anointing oil. Is the guy playing well? Yeah. But he's doing what people thought he would do. Okay? He's not playing on a horrible Colts team. You know, this was never a horrible team. They played horribly last year because they didn't have a quarterback. But Peyton Manning played pretty well on that team the year before. So, I mean, let's just see how the season plays out here. I'm glad he's being embraced. They had no choice. They got rid of a legend. They have to embrace him. You know, it's the same thing Green Bay did when they got rid of allow Favre to come back. They didn't get rid of him. But when he made his decision he wants to play, they said, well, you're going to go play somewhere else. And they said, we already made our decision, and Aaron Rodgers is our guy. And this is what the Colts are doing. They have no choice but to embrace him. All I'm going to say is, I think the guy is going to be is on his way to making his claim, but it's 4 games. You know what I mean? This is a funny NFL. It's a funny league, and it's 4 games. I would caution everybody before you go, you know, benching Peyton Manning and trying to see if you can trade for Andrew Luck in your fantasy football league. I would just slow down just a little bit. Train, what do you think?
Only thing I have to say about Andrew Luck, the one thing that I really like about Andrew Luck is his poise throughout the entire game. To me, it looks like the guy never gets rattled. He will get picked off. He will get sacked. The other guy's defense is on him. But he's like their dog that never stops barking. Like, he keeps coming. You know what I'm saying? He has a short-term memory of his mistakes, and he just keeps playing. He keeps playing until the clock is 0-0-0. And that's what I like about Andrew Luck. He does not stop playing. He does not stop playing the quarterback position, you know what I'm saying, at a high level throughout the entire game. You know what I'm saying? He keeps his poise regardless of his team's mistake on offense, regardless of his own mistakes. He just continues to keep his poise. That's the main thing I love about the guy. He did it in Chicago, and he definitely did it to overcome a 21-3 deficit against the Packers.
Yeah, I think one of the problems I'm having right now is it's still early, and, you know, I mean, you said he did it against Chicago, but, you know, they lost. It was his first game.
Yeah.
I'm sure he showed you the things that you said, but, let's see how they got the Jets coming up, and the Jets are playing better on D. They got some offensive issues, but they're playing better on D. Of course, you know, they're in the wrong division at the wrong time because Houston's just looking like world beaters right now. And, I just think we have to see more from Luck before we jump on his bandwagon to see if he really can maintain consistency, because that's what the great ones do. They do it week in and week out, and even when they have an off game or an off drive, they come right back. And I'm holding out on it just now. I think there's a lot of potential there, but I just think this team, the Colts, it's just the wrong time for them right now, because, I mean, you look around the AFC, and if you think the Colts may have a shot at a wild card, then who are you saying is not going to get in? Are you saying the Ravens or the Steelers? Because one's going to win the division. One's probably going to get the wild card. You know, the Bengals are going to be right there. We've already talked about the Broncos and the Chargers. They're going to be there. You know, the Patriots are going to win that division. So, I mean, where do we see the Colts slipping in? You know, it's just...
Hold on real quick. No, I didn't say that, you know, the Colts were going to make the playoffs or anything like that, but I am simply saying that, you know, starting next season, they absolutely should have every reason to believe they're a playoff football team. And, you know, there's excitement, and I call it the fandom that believes, you know, oh, hey, maybe we could make a run of wild card. I think that's too early, too premature for that, because there's still going to be growing pains. That offensive line is terrible. I don't know if how much you guys have seen of Andrew Luck play, but I think the best part of his game is personally is his pocket presence and again, his poise as well as Trey alluded to. But, yes, you're right. I did talk up Cam Newton last year, but I'm going to tell you one thing. Cam Newton didn't really have a staple game last year. You know, Cam Newton had great statistics, and the biggest knock tee that you gave on Cam Newton last year was, oh, well, what did he do? Did he win these games? And no, he didn't. He went 6-10. Right now, Andrew Luck is 2-2, but what I'm saying is the kid has already arrived. The kid has already made you talk about him, and it's not because of just the statistics. It's because the kid, again, pulled off a 21-3 comeback against the Packers, and did so in a very big way. Cam Newton didn't have that staple game last year, and he looked up. I'm just saying, man, the kids will only get better.
In all fairness, I find difficult to give Andrew Luck that much. I give him some credit. Okay, I'm not taking anything away from him. By the way, if anybody wants to call in and join our discussion, 347-838-9525, 347-838-9525. Then just hit 1, and that tells me that you want to be brought on the air. And any you don't even got to stay on point. If it's something else football-related, NFL-related, you know, we could jump. We're good here. We can bop topic to topic, not a problem. But I don't want to. Under it, this was part of the discussion is, you know, emotion in this game and something to play for is huge. We saw it in New Orleans after Katrina and the Saints, and how the Saints just carried that city, you know, under Sean Payton and Drew Brees and company right into a Super Bowl win at a time that area really needed an uplifting. And you got to believe there was a lot of talent, but there was also a lot of emotion. And now with Chuck Pagano, and, you know, certainly we want to take a minute and extend our best wishes to the Pagano family in hopes that, you know, I know he's in the hospital getting treatment for leukemia, and, you know, we hope that everything goes well and he can make a full recovery and hopefully get back to the sidelines one day. But, you know, when you have that kind of emotion, and coincidentally, the game's on NFL Network right now, and Green Bay's up 14-0 in the second quarter, which kind of, you know, goes back to what K-Star's saying, pretty good comeback. But the point is, the team really had a lot to play for. And so while we can sit here and say that Andrew Luck was certainly as the leader, and we've said this all, you know, the quarterback gets too much credit and sometimes gets too much blame. I think the situation where Luck might be getting a little more credit than he deserves, because that whole team was inspired that day to really do this for their coach. And hats off to him, too. I mean, hats off to the Colts, man. But let me ask you, Train, let me ask you a question. You know the Packers as good as anybody, being that you played them twice a year and they're one of your more hated rivals. They're now 2-3. Colts are 2-2. You know, is this a situation where you think the Colts are just a little underrated, rode in, a lot of emotion, the Colts are underrated, and or are the Packers overrated? Is this a situation where the Packers are riding Super Bowl championship a couple years ago, 15-1 last year, big reputation, and now we see this win, and we're all sitting here in shock? Or you being someone that knows his teams, do you feel like, nah, I'm not surprised at this at all? What do you think?
Well, I'd be lying if I say I wasn't surprised. I am. I am a little bit. I wouldn't necessarily call the Packers. I don't want to necessarily use the term overrated. I think they are underperforming in a certain sense, but I also, you know, this is like any other season. After a team see how you know, how deadly your passing attack was one season before, they now have a whole season of film. So they know the Packers are passing the ball. Teams know the Packers are passing the ball, so they are prepared for it. Now, the Packers do have quite a few injuries that's hurting them in both their wide receiving core and on defense. But still, you know, we talked about no excuses at the beginning of the season. I just think teams are more prepared for the Packers than they were last season. But at no point do I think the Packers are out of it. I mean, they're still a dangerous team. And I think they're still a better team than the Colts, even though they lost that game.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I think they're a better team. I think this was, you know, this is a situation where everything fell in place for the Colts and you know, some inspiration. And I will say, yeah, as K-Star said, I mean, I don't want to come across as someone who doesn't think Luck is talented. I do. I just want to see more. And I'm dying to see the Colts play Houston. You know, Houston, who has a pretty good defense. I'd like to see what, you know, they just lost Cushing. So, you know, we'll see what happens over there. But
I just wanted to add this real quick into this whole discussion. Moreover, I just can't say enough though the importance of that win to Indianapolis to buy this new era. It was very big for the city to get that win. It's not like before the game you thought to yourself, oh, well, if they win this game, the city's, you know, sold, they're moving on for Peyton. I don't think necessarily anyone believed that, but I think that the way they did play and how well Andrew Luck's played this season, and especially with that signature type of game all so early into his career, it really helped the process because of getting over Peyton Manning and now, you know, getting comfortable with this new star and Andrew Luck. And, you know, again, I just can't express enough. He looked great, and I understand that very early, T. I understand that. I'm not trying to sit here and say he's me in the playoffs this year or Pro Bowl quarterback, but I still definitely think that this was a very important win. And absolutely, the Green Bay Packers are certainly the better team, better than Indianapolis Colts, and I do believe the Texans will destroy the Colts once they play. Obviously, emotions played the most utmost important factor in this game. So I don't want to take away from his teammates or anything.
Yeah, but K-Star, if they're 2-2 now, and they get this big win, and you're saying it's such an important win, and then they end up 4-12, the win meant nothing. It was a 1 week great emotional win, uplift the city, uplift, you know, the feelings for the coach, a lot of publicity, yay rah rah. But then if they go 4-12 for the year, 5-11. It's forgotten. It's gone. Just like you said, Cam Newton didn't have a big win last year. You know why? He's 6-10. I can't even tell you who they beat last year because he's 6-10. You know what I'm saying? So if they build off of this, you know, we saw the Vikings beat the 49ers, and we started to say, oh, is this team for real? Now they're 4-1. Now we're starting to think, okay, this team means something. If this is, I think in 4 or 5 weeks we can look back and then maybe say, yes, this was a defining moment in the season for this team led by Andrew Luck. But I just think it's early. We got to see, you know, they got the Jets next week. And the Jets, you know, we're going to talk about the Jets, but don't sleep on them. Don't sleep on them.
Absolutely not. I mean, maybe a little premature, but I mean, again, four games, two comeback wins for Andrew Luck. Should have had a third one against the Jaguars, missed the field goal. I'm just saying.
Yeah,
you're pretty
right.
Good already.
Yeah, absolutely. Should be 3-1. Absolutely. Speaking of quarterbacks, and we talked in reference to the Hall of Famer Cam Newton, Dr. Train wants to address Cam's second year progress. So we will turn it over to Dr. Train, and this segment is known as Dr. Train's Philosophy.
I know our fans really love my segment. If they don't, I'm just going to think that they do. But my segment is about Cam Newton. And the question is, who's to blame for Cam Newton's second year slump? As a football fan and sort of as a Cam Newton fan, I have a bit of concern for this cat. Because last year, regardless of win or loss, this dude, he played. He played at a high level and an unexpected level. You know what I'm saying? And I mean, broke rookie records. And they didn't have a winning record, but Cam Newton's performance was off the charts. So naturally, you know, there's always the warning of the second year slump. But this seems like more than a slump. I don't even know what's worse than a slump. I mean, the guy is slipping game by game, and it's almost like he's about to unravel emotionally. But along with that, I'm trying to understand, you know, when I actually see them play, I'm not seeing the Cam Newton that was under center last year, in the shotgun last year. He had quite a few interceptions, but he still made good decisions with the ball. I'm looking at a offense that like it's made for Tim Tebow. Let me either hand it off to the running back or run it myself. You know, it looks like the option from college. I'm like, where is the offense that they had last season? Where is the next step so that you prepare yourself for opponents who now have tape on your quarterback? And I can't help but to feel like a majority of his second-year slump is due to the coaching staff. I really feel like the coaching staff is doing this guy an injustice. Now, mind you, their head coach is a defensive coordinator, and something is seriously wrong if you were a defensive coordinator before you became a head coach, and your defense is still sitting at the bottom of the league in its second year as your head coach. Ron Rivera needs to fix that. But besides that, I'm trying to understand offensively, why is Cam Newton still sitting in this second year slump? You know, five games within the season, and I really think quite a bit of the blame does fall on the coaching staff. I mean, not only do you need to help this kid understand how to handle the second year slump, but at the same time, you know, you need to come up with a game plan for him to succeed against these teams that he's seeing week in and week out. And, you know, he does make some mistakes in the game, but it just it doesn't look. I think he had maybe one good performance also so far this season. It doesn't look as smooth. The offense doesn't look nowhere near as smooth as it did last season. I think part of that is has to do with the coach staff.
I'm gonna let K-Star, because K-Star hasn't been a Hall of Fame. K-Star, what are your thoughts?
As I am right now polishing the Hall of Fame bus right now for Cam Newton, I got to tell you, Train, that I disagree a little bit. You know, Cam has done a decent job in holding himself accountable, and it might be to a little bit of a fault. The safety, Earl Thomas of the Seahawks, basically had said that, you know, he believes that Cam is pressing, that Cam is getting frustrated because, you're right, he's not getting that early success in these football games, and that if you contain Cam, if you limit Cam early, it will lead to him having a lackluster-type day. And that's what we saw in Seattle. That's what we saw that Thursday night game against New York. Now, that zone read, I mean, yes, while Tim Tebow ran it last year, so did Cam Newton, and they ran it extremely well. And actually, that might be their best offensive weapon with Cam. They ran a spread set last year, and again, they're doing this year. Maybe they didn't change it up enough, but they're still seeing success with that run play. The zone read's been very effective for them. The only problem is when they've been passing, it just hasn't been going too well. You know, Cam's making some terrible, and I mean just really bad decisions. I think it might be him just putting too much pressure on himself. For him really thinking he is Superman, he can do it all, you know, do it all on his lonesome self. I mean, the kid, again, he has no ceiling. Cam Newton is such a great talent. But right now, Cam needs, and it's perfect. I'm really happy that the Panthers have a bye week this week because he needs to rediscover Cam. Because at this point, Cam is pressing. You see in his plays. You saw it on that fourth down. We had a chance to win the game. Wide open tight end. He just one hops it to Ben Hartsock. Now, that wasn't on the coaches. No. It wasn't on the coaches last week at Atlanta when they had a third and one and Cam Newton fumbled the ball. No, that's on Cam.
Yeah, but if he's pressing, if he's pressing and you agree with that assessment, that's on the coaches because that's their job to manage that situation. And because we have that in Dallas with Romo, that's Romo's issue is when the Cowboys get in trouble, he presses and tries to do too much. And unfortunately, then we get the, oh no, Romo instead of the great Romo. And I came out against Jason Garrett and said, hey, what are you doing? And I feel the same way. If you buy that he's pressing and trying to do too much, then the quarterback coach, the offensive coordinator, the head coach, someone's got to pull this guy aside and say, hey, there's 10 other guys on that team with you. And you cannot do it alone. We need you to lead. We need you to play well, but we need you to play within the system and take what the defense gives you and play smarter. And we don't know if they're saying that or not, but we do know that they're 1-4 right now, and we do know that Cam has made some errors at critical times in the game that have cost him opportunities to win that game. And his response to that has not been the kind of, how do I say it, leadership response that you would hope from a guy of that stature. This isn't a seventh or eighth round pick or an undrafted free agent. You know, this is a, what was he, what did he come in as, a number one two?
Overall.
Number one, okay, number one pick, Heisman Trophy winner, national champion, you know. So this guy comes in with as much pedigree as you can bring into the NFL, except maybe not having a Manning as a father, having played before you, or an older brother. He comes in with a ton of pedigree. And so you expect a certain amount of leadership and poise when the team's not doing well. We're not seeing that, and we're also seeing some critical mistakes. I have to agree with Train that while, you know, I told you last year, let's slow your roll a little bit with Cam. I think part of it is the coaches aren't giving him everything that he needs, and someone's got to, you know, get in his head, sit him down, talk to him, put him around the right person, and just say, you have everything it takes to be the guy K-Star that you says that he can be. I don't disagree that he's got all the gifts, everything. He can throw, he can run. We saw throws made last year that just astounded us, broke Peyton Manning's rookie records. He's got all the tools.
We describe Cam Newton as a Tim Tebow who can throw because he can run the zone read option extremely well because of his stature, his size, and his speed. Now, I don't think the game plans are bad. I do, however, think that they do have problems in other areas. They can't really get a consistent run game. That's why they rely on the zone read because Cam is such a rushing threat. So it's possible that they might be asking too much of him, but honestly, some of that needs to fall on the general manager. Because I don't think they have enough talent anyway on defense or offense around them to really match that potential to reach Cam's full potential. And you're right. You know, maybe these coaches are in Cam's ear enough, like, hey, you know, settle down. You know, we need you to you know, play more of a leadership. Because right now, Cam, you can see in his press conferences, he's beating himself up. This is the first time that he's really had to deal with disappointment, with losses. And they ate at him last year. And now you've got to understand, it's the expectations only have been built. He's been hearing the K-Star of the world, put him in the Hall of Fame already. So it's getting to a tipping point right now for Cam. He's a young guy. I think so much of it falls on his age. But
K-Star.
Honestly, yes.
It's your fault. The Hall of Fame already, now he's choking. It's your fault.
I mean, guys, the reason, and I bring this topic up because, you already stated a few weeks back, coaching matters. And if you look at the 49ers and you look at Alex Smith, you see what the coaches are doing with Alex Smith. You know what I'm saying? They're putting this guy in, you know what I'm saying, in a position to be successful in that offense. And I feel like for Cam to be in his second year, where now teams have tape on him, I think it's definitely the coach's responsibility 100% to put this guy in the position to be successful within the offense that he has already been successful in. Why is he slumping so low? He shouldn't. I mean, bad games, yeah, but dude, this guy is beating himself into the ground almost after every single game.
I'm telling you, the game plans that surround Cam Newton that they put together, they're not flawed game plan. They are playing to his strengths. Listen, when Cam was in Auburn, he played in a spread set. They're doing the same thing. They did it his rookie year. They're doing it this year. They've had a lot of success in the zone read option. The only problem is Cam just isn't playing to what he did last year in critical moments. You know, he's just not coming through, and that a lot of that has to fall on Cam's shoulders. But because he's so young, you know, the coaches do have to lift his spirits. They do have to realize that maybe we are asking too much. Maybe we need to run the ball. But the fact of the matter is, we're playing to his strength. The zone read option,
yeah,
that's all his strength.
But they're 1-4, K-Star. And a guy with that talent, and you say it's got nothing to do with the scheme, but they're sitting there at 1-4. He was 6-10 last year, so that means he's 7-14 as a starter. You have him in the Hall of Fame. The guy has all the talent in the world. There is some – you know, they've got some – you know, D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart and
Mike Tolbert as well.
Yeah. Who's the other guy? Yeah. The wide receiver.
Steve Smith.
Thank you, Steve Smith. You know, I mean, they have weapons. You know what I mean? I mean, they and so.
Where are you going?
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? I mean, so when you look at their record and you say after a year and a third, they've managed 7 victories. You can't just dismiss and say, well, they've got the right scheme because he ran it in college. This ain't college. This is the NFL.
Look, I'm telling you, the coaches didn't one hop that pass in the end zone, the Seahawks. They didn't fumble that ball against the Atlanta Falcons.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's all on the coaches. I'm saying Cam Newton's got to pick it up, too. But you can't dismiss the scheme either. You can't just totally say, oh, the scheme's working, and it's just all Cam. I think there's a marriage there that's not happening. And if he's missing opportunities that could win the game, and we know he's making some mistakes, but if he's also missing opportunities and they're not getting in his head to correct that, then the coach has got to take some of this blame too. Because we all know this isn't like Tim Tebow, where he can't throw the ball. He did make one nice throw last night. We'll give him that. But this isn't Tim Tebow. This is a guy that can throw the ball, that can run the ball, that brings all the skills to the table. So, you know, shit, if Carolina don't want him, I know a team in Texas that'll take him. I mean, maybe not over Romo, but I'd take him.
Oh, you would take him.
Not over Romo. Nah, sorry. Anyway, all right. So, I'm going to do my segment, and of course I'm going to simulcast my segment, but before we do my segment, 347-838-9525, 347-838-9525. I also want to let everybody know that we're going to be, after my segment, I'm going to read a message we got from an Australian fan from the Outback. A guy sent me a message on Facebook, lives in Australia, follows the show, and it was a really, really nice email, said a lot of complimentary things about the show, but had some points that he wanted to address. I told him tonight on the show, you know, that we're going to address some of those points. So that'll come up next. Also want to thank Nikki Rich. Nikki Rich has her own show on Blog Talk Radio, and she's a Twitter fan of ours. And I follow her back and forth, and we might do some things together. But she does a lot in the entertainment business, and she actually retweeted listen to the Madden Voice tonight. So if anyone saw Miss Nikki Rich, CEO, that's her Twitter handle. If anyone saw her tweet and turned into the Madden Voice, welcome to this show, and I want to thank her. She's doing a show as we speak. It's more on hip-hop, so if you want to listen to a show where she's talking about hip-hop, then check her out on Blog Talk Radio, Miss Nikki Rich, CEO. Just want to say thank you to her. And before I do my piece, I almost forgot, this is really important, before I do my segment, if you listen to the show on Friday, I had stumbled across on Twitter a song. I'd stumbled across this song, and it's a song about football. And I listened to it, and I kind of liked it. You know, and I played it, and you know, I said, well, you know, that's one audience we have during the day, and now it's the nighttime, and so I'm going to play it again. And for those of you who didn't hear it on Friday, the show's called Football, and the artist's name is Misty Gonzalez, and we've corresponded back and forth on Twitter, and she's very appreciative that we're giving her song some airplay. And if you want to follow her on Twitter. Actually, I got to look it up. I think it's at Misty Freechild on Twitter if you want to check it out. But let me double check that. If you want to download the song, it's free. The link is up actually on the Madden Voice page on Facebook. So just go to our Facebook page, like it while you're there, and then you'll see the link for the song. It's called Touchdown. But I'm going to play it for you before I do my segment because I really like the song, you know. So this is Touchdown by Misty Gonzalez.
It'll be so exciting. Excuse my ignorance.
Hey,
how would she know?
Hey, I, you know what? I don't. Yeah, as The Rock would say, it doesn't matter how she knows. You know what I'm saying? I just like that song, man. It's just something. You know, I'm a hip hop R&B guy by nature. That's what I grew up on. But I like good music, and it was something just kind of got me when I heard that song. Like I felt some passion there. You know, I mean, that was. I don't know, man. I like it. It was hot, man. You like a train? I heard you over there bopping, man. Don't act like you wasn't. I heard you over there banging
right.
Your head.
You know? It was all right, man.
Nice, man. You're nice, man. Promoting, man. We want to cross promote, man. You know, it's called cross promotion, bro. You know what I'm saying? It was a really good song. I really like it. So thank you to Misty. I don't know if she's listening out there or not, but check her out on Twitter at Misty Freechild. You know, she's got other music out there too. I only caught this one because it's football related, so check her out. Because I might play it at the end of the song. If y'all missed it, y'all just tuning in, we'll sign off to it as well. But anyway, I'm gonna do my little T-Bonics, and I'm gonna simulcast. So I'm gonna go into broadcast mode, and I've got my video camera, iPod. It's really just my iPad here, and I'm gonna get ready. So here we go. And 3, 2, 1. Oh, wait a minute. No, technical difficulties. Here we go.
You get for name dropping the iPad on us all. That's what you get.
What's that now?
So that's what you get for name dropping the iPad on all of us.
Hey, you know, it is what it is, man. You know, shoot. All right, here we go. All right, Commissioner T here live October 9th on The Madden Voice, just reviewing Week 5, looking forward to Week 6. But this is my segment called T-Bonics. And last week I watched a special on ESPN called Broke. And Broke was about famous athletes that were broke. They made a lot of money, and now they didn't have anything. It was kind of a documentary, and they had a lot of athletes on commentary and a little bit about what had happened to them and why in the situation that they're in. And yeah, I watched it. It was very well done, by the way. I can't remember the guy's name who did it. Whoever he is, he did a good job. But it was well done as far as giving you information and being informative. You know, but as the week went on, I started thinking about it. I got a little angry. I got a little upset. And, and in full disclosure, I spent a lot of my life teaching financial education and money management to certain segments of the population before I started doing what I do. Now, I do this, which is a lot of fun, but I actually have another job where I actually work for a bank, and I have a pretty decent job at a local bank, actually pretty large bank. I won't get into all that right now. It doesn't really matter because I prefer you know me as Commissioner T of the Madden Voice. But I guess I say to say I have a lot of experience in this area. And you know, now when I look at this documentary, and I have some quotes from some of the athletes, okay? And the problem that I had was that these are athletes that, and let me share this. I have to find this for, bear with, here it is. So according to ESPN, by the time they have retired for 2 years, 78% of former NFL players have gone bankrupt or are under financial stress. That's a study done with Sports Illustrated and ESPN together, okay? I can't vouch for the validity of it, but that's what they're saying. 78% of former NFL players have gone bankrupt or are under financial stress. 60% of former NBA players have gone broke within 5 years of retirement. And the problem that I had with this documentary was there were parts of it where where it almost elicited some type of sympathy or feeling sorry or feeling bad for these athletes. And I want to read some of the quotes from the athletes themselves, okay, because I don't want to take anybody out of context. Some of the athletes, I think this was Leon Sarcy. I bought myself a yacht, a mansion, a couple of cars. That ain't $1 million. That's $7 million. I pretty much gave it away. I'm sorry. That's Keith McCants. Andre Bad Moon Rising, I guarantee you I spent $1 million on jewelry. Rocket Ishmael, former cowboy, squandered so much of his personal fortune in a series of failed businesses that range from a phone card dispenser to an inspirational movie to a calligraphy store to a record label. All right. This is Leon Searcy. I had an injury settlement for $60,000. Six of it, my ex-wife got on child support. I take the $54,000 I have and I pay $50,000 cash for a Hummer because I had to have it. All right. Keith McCants, family and friends, they stick it to you more than anybody. Bernie Kosar, former quarterback. There was probably different times I was taking care of 25 to 50 families. Leon, again, they knew when payday was, they knew it better than I did. They had it circled on a calendar. Bernie Kosar. I remember one point, I had like 60-some different cell phones. I know I only use one. Evander Holyfield pays hundreds of thousands annually to support 11 children. He is fathered by 9 different women. He also built a house that had 109 rooms in it. That was, I don't even remember how much money it was, but it's ridiculous. Okay, I'm going to get to the point because I don't want to belabor this, but there's a difference between Rocket Ismail and I made bad business decisions and bad deals. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who I know lost a lot of money because his financial advisors ripped him off. That's one thing that you can say, okay, these people tried to do the right thing, invest and be wise with the money, and hooked up with the wrong people and got ripped off. Fine. I understand that that's a segment out there, and they deserve some consideration because the laws of restitution under those things are you don't get your money back. That's just the bottom line. So if you give someone $1 million and they go and invest it and they squander it, you're not going to see that $1 million back. They may go to jail, but you're not going to see your money back. Okay, so fine. For that, I could say, okay, there's some level of wow. You know, feel bad for the guy. When you go out and you're paying for 60 cell phones, or you're paying for 50 families, mortgages and rents, or, you know, you're going out and buying jewelry or Hummers or all of the things that we know these athletes do, 4 houses and all that, and the women and all of that. I have no sympathy for you. I don't have an ounce of sympathy for you. Not one. Do you know how hard it is to make over $60,000 a year in this country today? Do you know when you get over $60,000, you're getting into the upper 25% of the income category in this country? Just making $60,000. These guys are making millions, millions, and some of them squandering it because they don't have the vision to plan ahead. They don't use the tools and resources that the NFL, the NBA, and the Major League Baseball, Major League Baseball League have available. They bring in players. They bring in financial advisors. They bring in people to sit down and say, you're 22, you're 21, you're 20. You just signed your first contract for $20 million. Guess what? The next one, if you're so lucky, is probably going to be 3 times that. What are you going to do? Let's talk about it. Herm Edwards, I know for a fact, goes back every year and talks to the NFL rookies about how they act on the field, respecting the game, and how they manage their financial money. And we all know how Herm Edwards can be influential. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry if I don't view it as my problem where I give 2 rats about someone who made $100 million in his career and has 9 kids and had a 100-room mansion and is now broke. I don't care. I could care less. Too bad. Boo-hoo. Check out the Madden Voice every night, Tuesday night, 8 o'clock, blogtalkradio.com. Check out T-Bonics and get educated. And remember, the Madden Voice, all feuds are settled on the field. Guys, I'm back. Any comments?
Wow.
Cosign. I mean, how can you feel bad for someone who had all the money that, you know, everyday people wish they could dream of having and then squander it and not even really value it? I mean, the fact of the matter is if you don't want to have that much money, honestly, how much do you really value what you have and yourself? You know, now I understand there's manipulation tactics where there's guilt trips and things of that sort, and that could be tough on you, but eventually someone, whether yourself or someone else, has to, and who loves you, mind you, needs to get in your ear and realize, hey, man, or hey, son, like, people are using you. You are being a victim. And the fact of the matter is you're being a victim of yourself if you think that you are this godlike figure who can cure all, carry one's problems, because no one is that. Money can't buy, you know, happiness. And the fact of the matter is in this situation, it didn't buy them any happiness, and obviously the people around them, because they kept asking for more. You know, you give it an inch, and they'll ask for a mile. So that's tough. But eventually, again, like, there has to be some kind of pattern that where a green light goes off in your head and you realize that, hey, you're getting played out, or, hey, maybe I need to worry about me.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem. People come into a lot of money, and they've never learned how to manage it.
And when you go to a job and they say, hey, you know, we wanted you to build widgets, but now we need you to build fidgets, then it's up to you to learn how to build fidgets and go to class and get trained. Okay, if you were broke your whole life and you lived in the ghetto, or you lived in a depressed area and you used your abilities to become a great rapper, a great athlete, or what have you, or heck, you hit Powerball for $200 million. And now you've never seen that kind of money. It is incumbent upon you to now educate yourself and get with the right people so that you don't make mistakes that we hear about every day. We hear about Terrell Owens. He was on Dr. Phil. We heard about it all off season. Guy made so much money, and now he's broke. House in foreclosure. Child support he can't pay. And now he's tweeting, that's please give me a job because I ain't got no money. We saw the last episode of his show, and you know the guy's in you know, he's a financial mess, and there's stories like that over and over again. But when these guys were 28, 29, and 30, and they were making 50, 60, 70 million dollars, that was the time for them to make the right decisions, not at the end of their career when they're broke. And the precedent is out there. It's out there. So there really isn't any excuse now. I don't want to hear that they came out of the projects and didn't know any better. I don't want to hear that all their family came around. They didn't know how to say no. Here's how you say no. Ready? Pay attention. No. There you go.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, man, the only thing is they have people like UT out there that can help them and kind of, you know, coach them through their finances. Like that, those they had every single option available to them, period. So you're right. It's hard to feel sympathy for them in that type of situation.
Look, man, I definitely wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. So, no, I cannot feel sorry for people who squander millions. There are people who don't even see $1 million within their lifetime. And, no, you can't feel bad for a person that's squandering away millions, man. At some point, you have to realize that you're not going to play football forever, and that money, you're not going to be getting that check every week for 16 weeks or 17 weeks in a row. At some point, you've got to learn how to save. It has to click. If it doesn't click in the first half of your career, at least let it click in the second half of your career when this might be your last big contract. Dude, I was a little baffled at how those guys squandered away their fortune watching that show.
Yeah.
I thought that was just, like, crazy.
I get irritated. I'm going to give everybody a free tip from Commissioner T. Free tip. If you want to understand about building wealth, and there's one book I would recommend, and it's called The Millionaire Next Door. And it's a study done by these two authors that studied the habits of rich people. It's called The Millionaire Next Door. And when I used to teach this stuff, and don't get me wrong, I'm not sitting over here like I'm better than anybody or I got all this money in the bank. I'm poor just like everybody else, okay? So don't misunderstand. I do know a couple of things, but I'm poor just like everybody else. But read this book, The Millionaire Next Door. I promise you, if you have no concept of money management and how to build wealth and what it takes, this book could change your life. Read it very carefully. Get the audio book, whatever you want to do. But I trust you. You will like this book. I know it's off topic, but it's a great book. So go ahead and check it out. All right. So we have a fan in Australia who sent me a very nice email or a nice message. So I'm going to read it, and then I'm going to comment. But it was really nice. And it's nice to know. His name is Adam. And I'm not going to give his last name, but Adam, if he listens. And so, Adam, thank you. You know, appreciate the message. And I'm going to read this now. It's going to take a minute, but I'm going to read it. Hi, Commissioner. I'm a fan of the show. I found it through iTunes in the preseason. Thank you, iTunes. I just want to share my thoughts about Romo and Dallas since it's been a massive talking point on your last two shows. I feel that certain points have been missed, and yes, it's certainly been blown out of proportion. If it wasn't a Monday night game, I doubt the same attention would have been applied. I understand that you being a passionate fan who has put yourself out there in the public eye must cop a lot of grief when the Cowboys lose. Adam, you don't know the half of it. I found out you take losses with grace and treat opposition teams with respect. Well, thank you very much. I think I do. That is, unless it's the Steelers. This last game, however, it seems to me like you've come under attack and all you are doing is defending. I can't fault that. If I were being attacked, I'd be defensive too. But what I wanted to say was, although the first two picks weren't Romo's fault, the cumulative pressure of these turnovers combined with the inability to get the running game going was enough for Romo to turn the ball over the next three times by trying to make things happen. I don't think Romo is a bad quarterback. His record stands for all to see.
and after playing with a punctured lung is a testament to his toughness. But I maintain that against a good defense and under pressure, Tony will turn the ball over to make something happen. This misconception is that Romo chokes. He certainly doesn't do that. Making mistakes under pressure is not choking. You cited the season opener as proof, but there are two things I can see wrong with that example. One, being that the Cowboys had an entire offseason preparing to get revenge on the Giants for knocking them out of playoffs, and two, the Giants' defense was soft in the opening game. Romo impressed me by calling audibles and getting the job done at important times in that game, but let's face it, it was week one. I can't tell you anything you don't already know, but I can only help you see from a different perspective. If my analysis has any merit, you will see the same thing against Baltimore next week. Not five picks, though, no way, at least two costly interceptions under pressure. I'm an Australian fan, and although I follow the Redskins, I am not anti-Dallas. I'm pro-NFL. I can happily watch any two teams play. I love the Dallas rivalry, but I also know the score. I also know that Dallas is America's team, and you can't throw a rock at an NFL podcast without hitting a Cowboy biased host. Then he continued to say that he lives in Tasmania. I asked him what part of Australia. Tasmania, the island state at the bottom of the country. Australia is dominated by rugby and Australian football, with soccer being the most popular code. There's a strong NFL following down here, but we're very much outnumbered. My best friend is a Cowboy fan. He wasn't able to watch the Bears. You guys have offensive weapons to take home a ring. It's just a matter of time before the machine starts to fire. I believe that Dez is still affected by the drama for preseason and may be struggling with the rules he has to abide by in his social life. Once he overcomes that, you've got yourself Megatron 2.0 right there. Thanks again. And finally, another point I forgot to make was that Cutler was shaky going to that game too. I felt that going into that game, you couldn't get two more evenly matched teams and it would be a Monday night classic. So that's probably another reason why the fallout was so harsh, because not only Dallas fans were let down, everybody was. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So I want to thank Adam for his very thoughtful and complimentary email about myself and about the show, and we appreciate that. And, you know, the power of the Internet. You know, I've been a part of the Internet since it started, and to just think that you have a podcast that the three of us host and this show and someone on the other side of the world in another continent, in another country, not only can listen to it, but then can also send us commentary like that. It's still mind-boggling. It's still mind-boggling. And so I want to thank him. But I do want to point out a couple of things here that I don't agree with. He said that the misconception is that Romo chokes. He certainly doesn't do that, but making mistakes under pressure is not choking. And then I mentioned what about game one and how he didn't make any mistakes under pressure. And he says that they had the entire offseason to prepare getting revenge on the Giants. The Giants had the same offseason to prepare playing the Cowboys. These are two teams that play each other twice a year. So I don't know that it matters. They know they're going to play each other twice a year. But off-season, you don't have the whole off-season to prepare for your first team. I mean, you've got to cut rosters. You've got to install offenses and defenses. Remember, these teams had no preseason last year because of the strike. So you've got to make sure you have your offenses and defenses installed. Training regimens, playbooks, scouting. Players and scouting, you know, the teams that you're going to go up against in preseason, because those are teams you're playing, and you want to make sure that your scouting is working. So when you see something, you say, okay, let's try this. And then it works. Like, okay, great. This is what we're going to do in regular season. So you really don't have all that time that you alluded to. You really have, you know, maybe about the end of the third game, maybe up until the first game. And remember, that first game was on a Wednesday night. So they actually lost 4 days that they would have had if it was a normal Sunday start. So I don't think, you know, they had the amount of time that you're implying. And whatever time they had, the Giants had the same amount of time. Don't think that the Giants didn't want to win this game, being that they were home and being that they were putting their Super Bowl banner up. The second thing he said is the Giants' defense was soft in the opening game. Romo impressed me by calling audibles and getting the job done at important times in that game. I want to say this, that just as I said the Bears had something to do with the Cowboys making mistakes, the Cowboys' offense had something to do with the Giants' defense looking soft. what Romo did against the Giants, he tried to do against the Bears. The Bears played it a little bit better, and the Cowboys also didn't execute. That very first turnover where and I saw it again today. It's still being talked about. I saw Eric Mangini diagram it today, and the Bears were coming in with one of their standard blitz packages, and Romo audible to the play to beat that blitz, and Dez made the wrong play. He didn't do what Romo asked him to do. Threw it. Tillman made a great play on the ball. Touchdown. And so I understand what you're saying, Adam, but sometimes there are other parts of the team that aren't executing plays, and it's affecting that what's going on. And that's what I said about those first. That interception was Romo. The interception of Ogletree bounced right off his hands, right into one of Train's players. I can't remember who. Major Wright, was it? I think he's the one that got the third interception. And then the second.
There's so many, we're starting to lose count.
I know. K-Star just he's got to get his little his little thing in there. the second one, we don't know if it was a shuffle pass, a fumble, or we don't know, but the pressure certainly led to that second turnover. And Romo's got to protect the ball there. So you can go either way and say, well, Romo got to protect the ball, or you can say, well, damn, offensive line, you got to give your quarterback pressure. So I see what you're saying, but here's the bottom line. Here's the bottom line. They got the Ravens coming up right now, and this is going to be. You want to talk about Cam Newton having or Andrew Luck having signature games? This is a signature game for Dallas right here. Okay, this is a signature game for Dallas. Guys, any quick thoughts on this email before we move on?
I'm happy we have Australian listeners. That is very cool.
Yeah, that's
that is very very cool.
That's all I was thinking when you sent us the email earlier today, and I was sitting there reading. I was like, "This is from an Australian listener. This is another. I mean, it's another different point of view, but it's still from an Australian listener." I'm with K-Star, dude. It's cool.
I do think he. First of all, he's very stifled. You can tell he's not American because we're America. We're assholes. But seriously, I will say this because it reminds me a bit of last year with the Steelers-Ravens opener, that the Cowboys had every incentive in the world, every burning desire in the pits of their stomach or the core of their body to beat the Giants, just as the Ravens beat down my Steelers last season. I get that. It's an extra added motivation. You know, the thing is, the Giants, it's not like they took the game lightly, but let's be honest, they probably didn't want it quite as bad as the Cowboys. Now, that's not an excuse for losing, because at the end of the day, a win is very important in this league. There's only 16 games on the season. That's not an excuse, but it's the human nature taking a little bit into effect of being lax, like, oh, we won, we're Super Bowl champions, or like my Steelers last year, also Ravens, it's Joe Flacco, they can't beat us. So I'll just say this, sometimes you do see those things happen. But I fully expect, for instance, the Cowboys to win this Sunday because they're extremely frustrating team. You can't really predict them. They're very inconsistent, and they'll just forever boggle all of our minds as a nation, and even as a nation to our friends down south as well in Australia. They're very maddening, the Cowboys. I think that's what people are upset, because they're impossible to predict. They're worse than the weather. It's ridiculous.
All right, so moving right along, because I'm going to save my Cowboys talk till we get to their pick on the Cowboys and the Ravens. I'm adding in a topic because I couldn't believe that I heard this. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I heard this today, and guys, I apologize. I'm doing an audible myself, but I couldn't believe that. And this has to do with Chris Johnson. This has to do with Chris Johnson, who at one point I considered the best running back in the NFL. Okay, about 2 years ago, I thought this guy was the best runner. I thought he was even better than Adrian Peterson, to be honest with you. And Adrian Peterson's a stud. Adrian Peterson is a man. But I thought Chris Johnson was just – I mean, Adrian Peterson's a very strong physical runner with a lot of speed. Chris Johnson is just fast. And he'll run around you. I mean, he'll take the scenic route, and he'll still get there. As fast as Peterson is, he ain't as fast as Chris Johnson was. I don't know how fast he is now, because the guy sucks right now. But anyway – Chris Johnson, and let me just let everybody know that Chris Johnson held out before the 2011 season and got signed to a $53 million contract, okay? So I have to throw that out there. And he was quoted as saying, I don't believe this team is close right now. You look at the games and how we're playing, we don't look like a good team. I wouldn't sit here and say we're close. We need somebody in his locker room to make plays and give us a spark. I feel like I've made some plays, but the situation of a spark has to come from someone and getting a spark that can be big for this team.
Wow.
Way to be accountable, Chris Johnson.
Wow. And they say Jay Cutler doesn't take any of the blame.
Has no touch.
Wow.
Chris Johnson, in 47 games before he signed the contract, had 34 rushing touchdowns. In 21 games since he signed that contract, he's got 4. I just say this, and then I'm going to let you guys jump in here because I'm pretty sure we're in agreement. I'm going to get right to the point. Chris Johnson, shut up! Shut your mouth. You should be the spark of that team. What are you talking about? Someone's got to be a spark. Are you kidding me? You are one of the fastest players when healthy, because I don't even know what your health status is. You probably ain't working out anymore. But when you're in shape, let me not say when healthy. Let me say in shape, you're one of the fastest guys in the NFL, if not the fastest. You've done things on that field that only a handful of guys in NFL history can say they've done as far as talent goes. You were incredible as a running back. You are now pathetic. And now, congratulations. Your attitude matches your on-field performance. K-Star?
Chris Johnson should go to jail for robbing the Tennessee Titans organization.
Oh, wow.
Chris Johnson is worse than the Halliburton crooks. Chris Johnson is like the scum of the NFL right now. Are you kidding me? Not only is this guy a thief, and seriously, he has to be, because no one just goes that bad after getting a monster contract. There's just no way. Look, you can't convince me that his skills have diminished at such a young age so quickly after signing this contract that now he's just this terrible. And then not only is he just god-awful, but he refuses to acknowledge how bad he is. He refuses to be accountable whatsoever. He refuses to actually be that spark of his team, because if he could just do anything, I think that would spark the Tennessee Titans. They would probably feel good about themselves. You know, the players, the quarterback, Matt Hasselbeck right now, the team could rally around some good play from the Rempick position, but they're not getting it. They're not getting anything. And you know what? When your team isn't doing so well, you know who they look to? The team's best player. And the paychecks say that it's Chris Johnson, but
breach. Breach.
He's a crook. So it's, you know what, I'm not surprised, and that's a shame, because, my God, you would think that, if anything, you could at least try to sell the fact that, oh, no, you're trying your best, you're going to, you know, have a positive attitude. But you can't even do that. You can't even do that for the organization. You're just going to further just, you know, put gasoline into the fire that you already caused, and it's ridiculous. I can't wait for the Steelers to come and see you this Thursday night. It's ridiculous. You're lucky Troy Palmer was on point. He would end your career. This is silly.
You know, I tip my hat to Chris Johnson for winning the stalemate and getting – his money that he felt like he deserved. But the last thing I expected for this guy to do is fold as a leader. If you underperform, that's one thing. But to not step up and be a leader for this team when they are struggling, when they need their best offensive player, their best player on their team to step up and give them that boost, to give them that 110% when all the chips are down is downright pathetic. I mean, you get paid, and this is your response? Someone else needs to spark the team, not me. I've made plays, and you've done nothing. You're killing fantasy owners, dude. Besides,
oh,
Robin.
Oh, God, yeah, he is.
You're killing fantasy owners, man. I mean, that's a really sad statement, man. That's wild.
I am very interested to hear what Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless have to say tomorrow about Chris Johnson. I'm very interested to hear.
Now, guys, I had an interesting conversation with a Titans fan, and he told me – I told him it wouldn't happen. But he told me that the team would either trade or cut Chris Johnson after this season.
He's
like,
crazy.
There's too much money invested, and they can't do either.
Crazy.
They have to try to get their returns.
C-Train, this is a situation, unfortunately, where we have, and we're going to talk about fans in a little in a minute, but this is a situation where we have fans that play too much Madden or too much fantasy football, and real business doesn't work that way. You don't pay a guy $53 million and cut him after 2 years. You can't afford to do that. You can't.
Exactly.
You might be able to trade him if another team is willing to buy that contract. That's a possibility.
Exactly.
There's another team. But you can't – it's just financially you just can't do it. You know, he's going to be there for another year or two minimum. And I don't know how his contract is structured and how much guaranteed money he got. But there's no doubt about the fact that people – fans, that's why you need to tune into the Madden voice. And get educated by Commissioner T, Dr. Train, and K-Star. We will teach you guys about football outside of playing Madden and fantasy football. It's a business, a $9 billion business. And you can't just, you know, this is what I hear about Romo. We, you know, Cowboys need to cut Romo and just let him go. And I sit there and say, and who are we going to go get? Who are we going to go get? We're going to go NFL Network, get Donovan McNabb? I mean, it's just, this isn't Madden. This is, you can't say like in fantasy football, Romo's on the block, can you trade? And who you got? Oh, give me, Andrew Luck.
Not right.
Tony Romo. It doesn't work that way in real sports, guys. You know, it just doesn't. This is contracts. This is money. And teams can't just get rid of players. Just like, why do you think the Raiders had Jamarcus Russell as long as they did, even though he was fat and out of shape and couldn't play? Because they paid the guy $60 million. And they had to deal with him for a couple of years before they could finally say, okay, let's get him out of here. You know, why do you think the Cowboys stunk so bad in the late 90s, although some would say they stink now? They stunk worse when they were 5-11 for 3 years under Dave Campbell. Well, that was salary cap because all the money they paid the Super Bowl winning teams. This is real football, real players, real money, guys. It doesn't work like Madden. It doesn't work like fantasy football.
These are real investments. I mean, like, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, I argue with him for about a good 30 to 45 minutes. Like, dude, you cannot cut a player after 2 years, after they just signed a contract for that amount and they're getting $30 million guaranteed. You can't do it. They can't afford to do it. And no one's going to eat that contract on a trade because people
absolutely
are
not.
Two running back systems.
Think about it right now, how hard it is, and I thank God I'm not one of those fools who, and I'm sorry to offend all of you people out there, all you Chris Johnson fantasy owners. Think about how hard it is right now to trade Chris Johnson in fantasy football, right? Just in fantasy football. Okay, now compare that to reality, how hard it would be to trade Chris Johnson. Like, come on. Let's be real. It's impossible to fantasy football. It's extremely impossible to it in real life football. Like, come on.
Yeah, I agree. Do a little whip around here. We don't have to spend a lot of time on some of these topics, but a minute on them. I just want to. I don't know if you want to get into this or not, but yeah, why not? You know, a lot of press on the Kansas City Chiefs fans cheering because Matt Castle was hurt, and there is some thought that the cheering was not so much that he was hurt. Because the general consensus is that this is not Philadelphia, this is not New York, this is Kansas City, and this is a good crowd by all accounts. Analysts and players and people that play there said, no, this is a well-behaved crowd. It is uncharacteristic for this to happen. And so there's some people that are saying that maybe the cheering wasn't because he was hurt, was they were just happy that he wasn't going to be playing. You know, it wasn't about, oh, God, you're hurt, yay. It's like, oh, he's not going to be playing, yay. I mean, I don't know. You know, I don't know Kansas City. I don't think I've ever been to Kansas City, so I can't speak on it. I just know that the offensive lineman there came out and was really direct against the fans. So he must have felt like they were booing that Castle was hurt, and he's on the team, and this is his crowd. And if he felt that way, there's got to be some merit to it. And you know, I'm not going to beat it to death, but wow, if that's the case, I mean, as a Cowboy fan, we saw Michael Irvin get hit. And carted off the field in Philadelphia, and they cheered. And Michael Irvin never played again. You know, that was the end of his career because they found he had a neck injury, and he never played again. but this was Philadelphia, and we kind of expect it. The only stadium in the NFL that actually has a detention cell right there for unruly fans. But Kansas City, I don't know. If this is the case, though, it's sad. And I will say this one thing, and I said I was going to stop, and I'm still talking, but I do want to say this one thing. You know, we love football. This is a show that Dr. Train accurately depicted as a show for the fans, by fans. We are passionate fans. And you will not find three more passionate fans than myself, Dr. Train, and K-Star. You will not find three more avid supporters of their teams than us three. But when you take your passion to the point where you're cheering for injuries, something's wrong with you. Something is definitely wrong with you, and you need to sit down and look at yourself in the mirror. I think you need to take that jersey off and go get mental help, because you got a problem. You got a problem that I can't help you with. Matter of fact, if anybody was listening to the show and they did that and they're proud of it, don't listen to me no more. Just log off right now and delete us from your iTunes account and don't ever listen to me again. I don't want you listening to me. If that's the kind of person you are, I don't need those kind of fans. It's ridiculous. Train, you got anything to say on it?
I have to agree with you. Fans can be really, really ugly. I think they forget that, yeah, these players, it's entertainment. It's entertainment. They are playing a sport, but this is their livelihood. So when they go down an injury, you know what I'm saying, there's a big chance that if that injury becomes season-ending, they'll never play football again. And there goes their livelihood. They didn't feel it, they didn't finish for 6 or 8 years or 10 years of college to go get several degrees. They came out and took their chance to play professional football and live their dream. Just the same as a normal student that goes through college and get a master's degree or get a PhD and they go on and live their dream. You don't root for them to lose their job. So why cheer when a player gets hurt? It's sad. You know, I even read comments. Even on the Bears page when they're talking about Chicago, and I was like, you people really are sick. Y'all, you don't understand that these players are people trying to live their lives, and their job is to play professional football. And if they get hurt, it's a possibility that they lose their job. I mean, that's the reality of it. And it's sad that fans will sit, and if that's the case, will sit and cheer for a player to get hurt, or even wish for a player to get hurt. I never like to see a player get hurt at all. I think it hurts the game. I like to see players stay healthy.
Anything else to add, K-Star? Or have we beat this up enough?
I think we're beating it up. I think that, you know what, and here's the thing. Personally, I would never do it, but I don't sit here and think, though, that anyone who has any sort of intelligence would ever come on air, would ever say it publicly, oh, yeah, no, it's cool to absolutely cheer when someone goes down with injury. Because then you expose yourself for being a sick human being. And I think that there are a lot of sick human beings out there, but they do so when you know, no one's looking. I'm actually surprised that there are people out there. You know, you're in a stadium full of 65,000-plus people. And I know some of these people may not know you, but how can you – I mean, you really want to cheer. And the thing is, it's not okay to cheer it. It's not okay to feel good about it. It's not okay at all. But if you really are that sick and twisted, like, why would you have – like, why would you show that? That just doesn't make any sense to me. That's stupid. So not only is it wrong, it's disgusting, but it's also like, come on, like, you're going to show the world you're a psychopath? Like, seriously? That's how you get – that's how you go through your day-to-day? Okay,
yeah.
Well, now you're an idiot.
Yeah.
So it is
bad. Sickening. Yeah, it's bad. It's horrible. All right. Drew Brees. Let's talk about Drew Brees. We've talked a lot of quarterbacks today. And the Saints pulled out a big win against San Diego. And Drew Brees broke Johnny Unitas' record, 48 now games in a row with a touchdown pass, and Johnny Unitas' record was 47, and the next person right now, I guess, is Tom Brady, active at 37. So, you know, Brees is someone breathing down his neck, so to speak. Train, you know, what are your thoughts on Brees and breaking this record?
Simple split. Congratulations. there was one statement said that I thought was very valid in this case. And it was said, you know, if you consider when United held this record and the time of how the way the passing game was then versus how the passing game is now, it's definitely a lot more doable, even for Breeze record to get broken, even moving forward. And I don't want to take anything away from Drew Breeze because the dude played when he made the switch when he got picked up by the Saints and started working with Sean Payton. I mean, that offense was it was fun to watch. So not taking anything away from Drew Breeze, but I just say congratulations. But definitely because we are in the era of passing, it's definitely believable that even his record could get broken.
K-Star?
It's impressive. You know, it shows that he's been very consistent throughout his career. But it also shows that the Saints consistently throw the ball way more than anyone else does. Every year, Drew Brees leads the league in pass attempts. But the fact of the matter is the reason why they're able to pass it so much is because of one Drew Brees being so efficient passing the ball. So kudos to Drew Brees.
I'll be brief. I don't care. It means nothing to me. I can give a hoot. Your team's 1-4. I'm more happy that you got a win. I mean, when it comes to fantasy football, I'm very happy because you're my fantasy quarterback. So throw all the touchdowns you want because I need them fantasy points. But, you know, when we get away from the fantasy aspect of it and we look at it, wins and losses and a team that's supposed to be competing for a Super Bowl, I don't care. I cannot believe how much press this record got. You know, and Sean Payton's going to be there. And who gives? Do you want Sean Payton look at this 0-4 team? Are you kidding me? You guys are pathetic. Your defense is pathetic. And thank God you won. Thank God you won. Because I'm going to tell you, it would have been the – as a matter of fact, had he got the record and the team lost, that was going to be T-Bonics. So I cut back on it because at least they got the win. And to me, that's what it's all about. You're 1-4. I don't care. I don't want to. Last year you got the record, the most yards, but you went to the playoffs. You know, you were in contention to go to the Super Bowl, so it was all good. But this year you're 1-4. I don't want to hear about records. I don't want to hear about yards. I don't want to hear it. You know, your team is 1-4. Your team is pathetic. There's a reason, absolutely. But you know what? Who cares? No one cares. No one cares that your coach got suspended. No one cares that half your defense is sitting on the sideline from Bounty Gate or whatever. No one cares. You know, what people want to see is get it done, right? That's what we've been saying this year, right? Get it done, right? Well, at 0-4, too much hype on this record. I don't care. And you know what? And if I did care, I would say Johnny Unitas did it when there were 12 games in a season. You're doing it with 16 games in a season. It's not the same. I'd almost dare I say asterisk, 12 games in a season, and he did it. So that means he carried this into an extra off season and continued the streak, okay? In a time when passing was nothing like what it is today. And yet he did it for 47 games in a row. I love Drew Brees. This is not a bash Drew Brees segment. But all I'm saying is I think it's a little overblown. And I think this team is 1-4. And that should be the top news story, not Drew Brees setting a record. That's all I'm saying. We saw the Jets play a much better game than I think most people expected. Or did the Texans not play as well? 23-17 game. Question I have for you, K-Star, since you're followed the AFC fairly closely. Are the Jets just too stubborn here or what? A couple examples. You know, Tebow has had 16 touches this year. That's it. 16. 12 runs, 4 passes. He threw one pass yesterday. That pass was picture perfect. And Jason Hill, who if you listened to my show on Friday, you heard me go off on them signing Jason Hill, career 76 catches in 6 years and just over 1,000 yards in 6 years. And you got T.O. sitting out there who tweeted today, I'm ready, come, you know, play me, coach. You got Chad Ochocinco or Johnson sitting out there. And you got a guy that had 6 touchdowns last year sitting out there. And you go sign Jason Hill, and right on cue, he drops a perfect pass. But anyway, they signed Jason Hill, who's a nobody. They won't play Tebow, who clearly gives this team some fire and some moxie out there. Are they just too stubborn? I mean, what is going on with the Jets, K-Star?
The Jets coaching staff and organization, stubborn from, you know, Woody Johnson down to Rex Ryan and Mike Tannenbaum included. You know, offensively, that team has no skill position players. They don't have any running backs. They have 3 Pro Bowl offensive linemen, and they have an underperforming quarterback. Now, that, again, Jason Hill, you brought in Jason Hill as the answer to your Santonio Holmes, to your Stephen Hill injuries. Like, what's going on? I mean, fact of the matter is they're not going to play Tim Tebow. They're not going to play they're not going to bench Sean Green, the infected Sean Green. And, you know, they're not going to make any changes whatsoever to improve that football team. They're not going to bring Plesko back. You know, who really knows as to why? But what I can tell you is, again, either Rex Ryan is loyal to a fault to Mark Sanchez, to the Sean Greens, to, God, whoever, Stephen Hills of the world. And it's going to cost him his job ultimately because it's going to have to. The fact of the matter is they brought Tim Tebow in and he hasn't done anything. And it's not because he's been ineffective, because we've seen him be effective when he's come in the game. I saw it against the Steelers. You know, we saw last night he threw an absolute strike down the middle of the field only for Jason Hill to drop it off his hands because it's Jason Hill. Nice signing, Mike Tannenbaum. And, you know, it's just an organizational breakdown right now. They always want to grab the headlines, but they don't want to grab the wins. And it shows from their you know, skill position standpoint, and again, just their stubbornness from the loyalty of the coaching staff to certain players. We don't understand as to why, and to Mike Tannenbaum for still just bringing players who are journeyman players at best and not proven commodities in the NFL. It doesn't make any sense to me. It really does not.
Yeah, and the other thing that we need to keep in mind is as of Friday, there were still 12,000 seats available for this game. So now when you talk about Rex Ryan losing his job, I would say it's unlikely, except when now seats are not getting filled. You know, now that's when they start paying attention, when you're not putting butts in the seat. And what's going to happen, I'm telling you, you know, Rex Ryan's coming out saying, I'm not interested in – well, actually, he didn't say he wasn't interested. He said, I will never say never. But he says that Mark Sanchez is their quarterback. I'm telling you guys, I said that Tebow's coming. Trust me, Tebow's coming. I guarantee you, Tebow's coming. Train, any quick thoughts before we move on?
I pretty much agree with everything that K-Star said. I truly don't understand this Jet team. I don't understand how you say we're not going to show the Wildcat in the preseason, and you're not even showing the Wildcat in the season. I don't understand how you lose your number one wide receiver for the season, and you sign a number 6 wide receiver to replace him. Yeah,
I don't get it. All right, you know, we're going to do our NFL power rankings in a minute. But before that, I thought it'd be interesting with so much good quarterback play. You know, when you traditionally think about the top quarterbacks in the league, of course you think about Tom Brady. Of course you think about Drew Brees. Of course you think about Aaron Rodgers. Of course now, you know, Peyton Manning's back in the league. So those are 4 names that would pop into your head immediately as guys that you would consider to be, you know, any of those guys any given day, you could say they're best in the league. You know, Peyton Manning just played, Tom Brady this weekend. You know, so those 4 come to mind. Then you can throw in Ben Roethlisberger. He's got 2 Super Bowls. You can throw in Eli Manning. He's got 2 Super Bowls. You can throw in Tony Romo, who's the 2nd highest rated quarterback of all time. Although he doesn't have any Super Bowls, he's got the numbers. So you can throw, you know, now you're getting into 7 guys right then, right? But now, this year, we're seeing a crop of other quarterbacks, Alex Smith, Matt Ryan, Andrew Luck, RG3. We're seeing other quarterbacks come in now and start playing at a reasonable level. They're starting to play at a reasonably high level now. So I thought it would be interesting to see what we all thought were the top five quarterbacks in the NFL based on performance, based on getting it done. So, Train, I'll start with you. Who do you have as your top five quarterbacks? You can go five. Start with five.
Okay. I will say my top two are you know, they were easy to pick. The rest of them, I was just like, I really don't know who deserves 3, 4, and 5. But anyway, at number five, I put Eli Manning. At number four, I put Peyton Manning. Number three, I put Tom Brady. Number two, I put Alex Smith. And number one, I put Matty Ice, Matt Ryan.
Wow. Me and you are very close. Interesting.
Oh,
all
wow.
right.
Really?
I'll tell you what mine is in a second, but K-Star, 5 through 1.
All right. I have Alex Smith at number 5, Peyton Manning at number 4, Big Ben at number 3, Brady at number 2, and Matty Ice at number 1. Now, doing this, I took the top five QBRs. I put that into play, as well as regular statistics, as well as wins and losses. Eli Manning barely, just by a hair, missed my top five. I thought he was extremely deserving of being in there.
Let me just ask you the obvious question. I don't know, man. I think we need to just exclude you from rankings because you don't make any sense. How do you have Alex Smith, 4-1 San Francisco, number 1 QBR, number 1 NFL rating, 4-1 San Francisco, and you have him at number 5?
It's very simple. He's asked to do a lot less than what other quarterbacks are to do, and the what we decided to grade this upon was performance. I mean, let's look at it. He averaged 217 yards a game. So right away, you have to look at it again, that obviously he is not the key cog in his offense. You know, with 217 yards a game, again, it tells you that, hey, they must have a great running game if you wanted to throw the ball that little. And B,
he is more of a key cog than you actually give him credit for.
He's in the top five. What do you want? He's in the top five. When have we ever put Alex Smith in the top five of anything besides top five bust in the last 10 years?
When has Alex Smith ever been the top-rated quarterback in the NFL, ever?
You're right.
I mean, that's what
Absolutely.
I'm saying. I mean, give the guy his credit here. You know, I mean,
he's in the top five. I'll give him that. But, I mean, again, he's just not asked to do as much as other quarterbacks are. So it's harder for me to sit here and say, okay, well, he's the guy who has some pretty good numbers, but with way less pass attempts, with way less responsibilities than some of these other aforementioned quarterbacks.
I think that's relative when you say not asked to do as much. One of the main reasons why I put Alex Smith up there so high above everyone else is because this guy takes care of the football. He does not throw interceptions. He does not fumble the ball. He's 8 touchdowns, 1 interception, and his team is 4-1. And a big reason why his team is 4-1 and not under 500 is because Alex Smith takes care of the ball. He did it last season, and he's doing even better this season.
I'll put it like this. If you really believe that Alex Smith is the reason why the Niners are 4-1 and not the running game and the defense, then there's something wrong. I mean, while he's playing very good ball, I'll give him that, the best of his career by far. He's in my top five. It's not like he's not in it. For right now, but he's asked to do so much less than these other guys. These other guys are the reason why their teams succeed or they fail. Alex Smith's job is just not to screw it up, and he's done that to a point. He's done that to a point, but he's still, again, the team is predicated around the ground game and defense.
So we've had a philosophy that quarterbacks either get too much credit or too much blame, but in this case, he's not going to get any credit. He's going to get a little bit of credit
because he's
a game
five.
Manager.
He's in my top five, and let's look at it. In the Minnesota game, they put how many points on the board? What, 13?
So go through the one game they lost. They're 4-1. Your team was a You've got Ben at number three, and your team was a field goal away from going to 1-3.
My team was also a field goal away from going 3-1. What's your point?
But you're 2-2. You know what I mean? I mean, you give the team no credit here. Give the guy the credit that he deserves because he doesn't make mistakes. He does what he's asked to do. He doesn't design the game plan. He executes the game plan. Don't critique. Don't shoot him down because he doesn't throw 30 passes a game because they don't have to. I mean, you know, congratulations! I wish we had an offense that effective that we didn't have to go out and throw 30 passes a game. We don't, but they do. They've got a good defense. They've got a good running game. And
you know
when
what?
They need
Hold
to
on.
To the
whoa,
air,
whoa.
He's let successful.
Let me correct you real quick. They did have to throw the ball 30 times in the Minnesota game, and they lost
one game. Yeah, you're talking one game out of.
My point is, if the situation isn't right. His chances of succeeding are much lower. If they had to come from behind, which they really do, because their team is so good around Alex Smith.
4-1.
You know, they don't succeed. We saw it. Yeah, we saw it in one game. But I mean, the matter is the tell of the tape. The guy isn't asked to do much because he isn't trusted to do as much as other quarterbacks. That's just it.
Well, let me ask you this, and I understand Big Ben. I understand Big Ben is your quarterback. I mean, I did teeter on quitting Big Ben. In my top five, I was looking at saw his QBR, but at the same time, the Steelers are 2-2. And according to your argument, you're basically saying that Big Ben has to do more for his team than Alex Smith has to do for his team. So how do you put Big Ben above Alex Smith when the 49ers are 4-1 and Pittsburgh is 2-2, even if they're both in your top five?
Because you look at the numbers, Big Ben, in one less game played than Alex Smith, has more passing yards, he has more per game, he has more touchdowns, the thing is, we missed a field goal to go 3-1 while T's talking about the field goal we did make. You know, it doesn't really fall on responsibility of Big Ben when we are simply 2-2. It wasn't because of Ben. Again, he's 100-plus quarterback rating. He's a 6 in total QBR. So my point is with Big Ben versus.
He doesn't have more passing touchdowns. He has 8. He has 8, and Alex Smith has 8.
Okay, he's averaging more per game, though. He's played in one less game. He has more passing yards, and he has just as many touchdowns. What does that tell you?
And two
he's
less
throwing
blocks.
The ball more.
Two less wins.
Oh, what is that? No. How is he throwing the ball more on less games? Like, what do you. No. That. The fact of the matter is he's being more productive. He's putting more better numbers, not because he has to, because the fact of the matter is he's asked to do more. The game plan involves Ben more than does Alex Smith, just as Peyton Manning does, just as Tom Brady, just as Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan is 5-0 and unquestioned and the best right now.
Listen, I think it is blasphemy to hold against a quarterback that he is asked to do less at this point in the season because his team is playing well in all phases of the game. And so the things that he's asked to do, he does them very well. Dare I say as good as anybody in NFL up to this point, and you're criticizing him because he's not asked to do more. Well, he doesn't need to. They're 4-1. They had one game that against a Minnesota team that's looking a little bit better than we thought. So let's not just call that game, you know, like an anomaly. That team is actually looking like they're a force to be reckoned with in the NFC as well. And all I'm saying is they're 4-1. You know, and so my problem with your ranking is you minimize his impact on a team that he's a quarterback of and he's 4-1. Yet if they're 1-4, I bet we'd be all over him. We'd be all over Alex Smith. He's got to do more, just like we're all over Cam Newton at 1-4. And we're saying he's got to do more, right? He's got to execute. You just said he's one-hopping passes and, you know, he's fumbling at wrong times. Well, Alex Smith isn't doing that, and they're 4-1. Got to give the guy his credit. That's all I'm saying.
I'm giving him his credit. He's in the top five. You asked me to go off quarterback. Hold on. You asked me to go off a quarterback performance. You asked me to go off a quarterback performance. Look, if you take his numbers through the year, if you project them, I'm looking at it right now, he is less than 3,300 pass yards.
He's still a great rating.
But the fact of the matter, he's not doing as much. So, again, he's in a great situation. He's playing great ball.
Let me just say this. I take exception to you saying that he's not doing as much because the statistics are less than the other quarterbacks. He's doing everything he's being asked to do as part of the overall game plan. It's not – don't penalize – it's like the argument I heard about Emmitt Smith for years. Emmitt's not that good because he played behind a great offensive line. Like, he was the only running back to ever play behind a great offensive line, yet the guy rushed for 18,000 yards in his career, but no one wants to give him credit for that. Like, he did what he was asked to do, Emmitt did. Well, Alex is doing what he's asked to do. Don't criticize him because he happens to be playing for a top-ranked defense. Don't criticize him because they've got an all-world running back. He's still performing at a high level, doing everything that he needs to do to win the game, 4 out of 5. That's all I'm saying.
I'll conclude it with this. Alex Smith is a tremendous, tremendous role player on that team. Period. Tremendous role player. Wonderful job. Top five right now.
And so San Francisco is the only team in the NFL that doesn't need a good quarterback to win. Every other team needs one except San Francisco, right? Okay. My top five was at five, Ben Roethlisberger. At four, Peyton Manning. At three, Tom Brady. At two, Matt Ryan. At one, Alex Smith. So Train and I were fairly in sync. We had Alex Smith and Matt Ryan flip-flop. Tom Brady, we both had at three. All of us had Peyton Manning at four. And then I had Ben at five over Eli, although I don't take exception to Eli. I looked at Eli. I looked at him. I just thought, not quite. But I did look at Eli. And who else? There was another quarterback that I thought should have gotten Yeah, I looked at Andrew Luck, too, but at 2-2.
I looked at Luck as well.
You know, but Luck's playing well, you know, and you know, he's definitely – but I just don't think the Colts are – they're 2-2 just like Pittsburgh, just like Denver's 2-3. But I just don't think the Colts are really that good.
So,
I just don't.
Hold on. So let me get this straight. Train, you had Alex Smith over Matt Ryan?
No, you had Matt Ryan over.
I had Matt Ryan over Alex Smith. I think Matt Ryan is playing at an exceptional level.
Hold on, T, was that you? Did you have Alex Smith over Matt Ryan?
Yeah, had Alex Smith over him, yeah.
I did.
Why? Explain yourself.
Because he's 4-1, and he's the top QBR and the top NFL-ranked quarterback, and they're 4-1.
Matt Ryan is 5-0.
I didn't discount the fact that they're 4-1. I looked at the fact that he's the top-ranked quarterback on both of the measuring sticks that we use. He's number one, where Matt Ryan is 2 and 3. Alex Smith is number one and number one. And I thought that that was very significant, that he's played at that level where two systems that rank quarterback play, and these two systems are completely different, okay, completely, and yet Alex Smith is number one in both of them, and his team is 4-1. I thought that that gave him a little bit of an edge over Matt Ryan, who absolutely 5-0, you know, 5-0. But
I mean,
his statistics have him as a second-ranked NFL-ranked quarterback and a third-ranked QBR. I mean, he's behind Peyton Manning in QBR, and it goes to 2-3. And I thought that that was significant. I thought that that was like, wow, your team's 5-0. And yet your QBR falls behind Peyton Manning, who's at 2-3.
I disagree. Only because, look, Matt Ryan, we've seen the comeback wins. We've seen absolute blowouts. I mean, we've kind of seen it all. And, again, he's the focal point of that Falcons team right now.
My thing when I watch, if you want to use your phrase, he does more for his team. When I say the Atlanta barely looks to even run the ball anymore, this dude is dropping back the pass almost every single down. This dude's arm should be jello. But I mean, he's not killing the team. He's definitely helping them. He's definitely playing the position well. But man, this guy's passing the ball a lot, a hell of a lot.
Yeah, I know, because I got Michael Turner in one of my fantasy leagues because he was incredible last year, got me a lot of points, and thank God I have Tony Gonzalez on one of my teams because they are throwing the ball quite a bit. They are. But again, I mean, I guess it's just a philosophy. So he's throwing the ball a lot, but do they have to? I mean, they've got a great running back there. So do they have to?
I mean, they've been behind a couple ball games, the Carolina ball game, and they're behind against Washington.
I disagree. I disagree in that Carolina ball game. I watched that Carolina ball game. I watched them hand the ball off to Michael Turner, and he ran like a beast. He literally carried three people 5 yards, and then I saw them take the ball out of his hand. While the game was still close, when they could have just grunted out and shut and, you know, kept their let their defense get rest, no, they just started back passing the ball. There were games that were close because they weren't using the run game, because they are sitting there just passing.
I'm going to tell you something. If they get too far away from the run, they're going to be in trouble. I mean, look what the Patriots are doing right now. Patriots are running for 200 yards a game now, and that passing game is wide open now because they have a potent three-headed, maybe four-headed if you throw Woodhead in there, but definitely three-headed running attack. They're rushing the ball like crazy now. And if Atlanta gets too far away from that run, they're going to be in some trouble. I know they're 5-0 now. But there's a reason why they didn't come out. They're not number one on anyone's par rankings. There's a reason for that.
Dude, I mean, just take this. Just take this for example. The last game, this game they just played, they get the ball inside the one. It's on first down inside the one, and you do a play action to Tony Gonzalez, and you have Michael Turner as your running back.
Right.
If that ain't downright disrespectful, I don't know what is.
Whoa, it's downright disrespectful to throw to Tony Gonzalez, the best tight end of all time, in the red zone.
It's downright disrespectful not to hand the ball off to a running back when you are an inch from getting a touchdown. Yes, and the running back is Michael Turner. With a running going against a team that is subject to the run. Because he still had a beast game.
Did Tony Gonzalez force a touchdown?
Dude, if you saw that pass, had a defender just got a hand, just his hand into the right position, that's an incomplete pass. You're not going to tell me, as an offensive coordinator, you don't know you got the ball on the inch-yard line, and Michael Turner's your running back. You're not going to sit here and tell me that you're going to call a play action to Tony Gonzalez.
First down would be the down to do it.
What?
Yeah, first down, be down to do it. That's when they expect to run on first down. I mean, let's be honest. You're at the inch line. You faked yourself. They faked you out, it sounds like.
That's what they did.
I have both Gonzalez and Turner, so I win either way. But I got to agree with Train on this one. If they make that a habit, they're going to pay. You know, you got to pound that ball in there. You're at the 1 foot line like that. You got to pound that ball in there. That's what you pay those guys for. And you got a big, brutal back like Turner, and you don't even try. I mean, and Gonzalez made a great play, but he had to work way too hard to catch that one half yard pass. Thank God he was a basketball player in his day, or that wasn't happening. It was a great play, but it just seemed like, wow, all that when you got Turner back there. They're just getting too far away from the run, I think. I think it's going to come back and haunt them. You know, they're playing teams that you know, the Bears got a good defense. Cowboys have been playing good defensive ball. The 49ers, good defense. I mean, there's some teams in the NFC that have some good defenses. And if they get too far away from the run, Atlanta's going to fall. I mean, like I said, there's a reason why at 5-0, they're not considered the number one team in the NFL right now. Let's talk about par rankings right now. Let me go with K-Star first. K-Star surprisingly did not have the Steelers in his top five, but he did have Chicago at number five, Minnesota at number four, Atlanta at number three, Houston at number two, and San Francisco at number one. So Chicago makes their first entryway onto the Madden Voice Power Rankings. I was a little taken back by, you have San Francisco as your number one team and Alex Smith as your number five quarterback, and you have Atlanta as your number three team, and you have Matt Ryan as your number one quarterback. I mean, I'm not sure that I see the logic there, but
speaks to the team. The Niners last two games, the score 79-3. I mean, look, the Niners have been nothing but dominant this year. They lost to one team, the Minnesota Vikings, who are also 4-1. So while the Falcons are 5-0, they're doing it by the skin of their teeth. The Niners just flat out dominate anyone they play at this point in time. So, I mean, again, I think the Niners are an easy choice there. I'm just looking at how just brutal of a team they are, physical. They're incredible right now.
And you put
before you say something. K-Star, I totally have respect for everyone's rankings, and I definitely have respect for your rankings. But I am amused that the argument that you choose, that you just chose to give, you chose it for the power rankings, but you did not choose that same argument for the quarterback ranking.
Thanks.
I do find that amusing. I respect your rankings, but your argument is just like, I'm going to use this argument for the power rankings, but not for the quarterback rankings. As if they don't coincide.
Well, the Niners' defense have held teams to 3 points the last two games. I mean, the Niners' defense aren't playing offense either, so it's, I don't know what you want from me. They're the best right now.
Yeah, but let's remember that they played the Jets and the Bills the last two games. Okay, let's not act like they're playing the Packers and the Saints.
No,
they're playing
the Jets did give the Texans a hell of a game last night. We'll say that. I mean,
well, okay. Hey. But the Jets scored 48 points in their first game and have 50 points cumulative since their first game. Their offense have been pretty much woeful under Sanchez. And Buffalo, we don't even talk about. We don't even spend any time on Buffalo. So, I mean, I get what you're saying about the San Francisco defense. They did what they're supposed to do against inadequate teams, and that's my point about Alex Smith. He's doing what he's supposed to do and what he's being asked to do, so is their defense. Trane's NFL rankings, Baltimore at number 5. Chicago at number 4, San Francisco at number 3, Atlanta at number 2, and Houston at number 1. And again, Trane and I are similar thinking here, K-Star, so maybe you need to drink some T-Bonics.
Yeah, you guys said the Cardinals number 1 a couple of weeks ago. I don't want to hear it.
Okay. And they're still 4-1, so I'm not ashamed of that. I had Baltimore at number 5. Actually, Chain and I had 4 out of the same 5 teams. I had Baltimore at number 5. I put Minnesota at number 4. I really thought long and hard about whether Chicago got in. Call it sour grapes because they beat the Cowboys. Or I actually think the Minnesota win over San Francisco was more impressive than any Chicago win. So that's why I gave them a nod. The Cowboys are not the 49ers, I'm sorry to say. So that's why. If we had been 6, I think I would have went with Chicago at 6. San Francisco at 3, Atlanta at 2, Houston at 1. So when I did the points, the TMV NFL rankings have Chicago making their, unleashing into the top 5 with the number 5 ranking, Minnesota with the number 4 ranking, San Francisco with the number 3 ranking, Atlanta with the number 2 ranking, and topping it off, the Houston Texans at number 1. And then I decided to take a quick look at the NFL rankings, and a little bit of a difference. Number 1, like us, they have Houston. Number 2, like us, they have San Francisco. I'm sorry, they have Atlanta, like our cumulative rankings. Number 3, like our cumulative rankings, they have the 49ers. So we agree with the NFL writers at NFL.com. 1, 2, and 3 is the same. And I don't look at this at all until I do ours, just so everybody knows. I don't even look at it, even do my own. I don't even look at it. But number 4, they have Baltimore. And Baltimore did make 2-5 picks on our list. And number 6, a team that we haven't talked much about in the power rankings, the New England Patriots. They have at number 6. And then just around the top 10, I'm sorry, number 5, the Patriots. Number 6, the Giants. We haven't talked much about the Giants. Number 7, the Bears. And I think they're not giving the Bears enough respect there. 8, the Steelers, maybe giving the Steelers a little too much respect. Number 9, the Eagles. And then number 10, real shocker to me, the Packers. I don't get that one at all. But the Packers, they have over the Cardinals, over the Vikings. I don't get that one at all. I don't get that one at all. So I think, you know, when you look at their top 8, maybe top 7. Okay. Then after that, I don't know. I don't get these NFL writers.
Whose rankings are those?
NFL.com.
NFL.com?
Yeah, NFL.com. They have a power poll, and it's based on their writers that write for NFL.com. They all do their own rankings, and then they do a cumulative. Voters in the NFL.com Power Bowl, Gil Brandt, who has some Dallas roots, long story, but used to be part of the Cowboys organization, Bucky Brooks, Charlie Casserly, Heath Evans, Daniel Jeremiah, Michael Lombardi, Willie McGinnis, who I think was a player for the Patriots, Sean O'Hara, Greg Rosenthal, Darren Sharper, another former player, Kurt Warner, we know who he is, Brian Weber, Steve Weiss. So those are all the people, and it's their cumulative voting, and then that's the rankings. So,
okay, I must be looking at something different then.
Yeah, probably.
I'm probably looking at Green Bay being 3-2 rather than 2-3. Some people can't go over the Monday night fiasco. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, I don't know.
The Vikings are 4-1, man. You can't
I agree.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap up with our picks. And we only have 4 games to pick from this week, kind of get us back to a little bit of normalcy. Train, quickly, how did we do last week?
Man, how did we do? Let me get to the site real quick. T says I snuck one in. I honestly did not think of this game until you were doing the matchups, until we were actually on the show and we were doing the matchups. And that's when I brought up, because I looked at it like, okay, this could be a pretty good matchup for the next week.
Me and Case started to have research, man. You know what I'm saying? We just get the last minute. Oh, let's add this game in, guys.
I only had a few minutes myself, man. I just like, hey, dude, we should consider this one, you know, because it was, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, last week, Miss T, he got, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. No. Yeah, 5-1. Oh, man, I am confused.
You 5-1. Oh, okay, good. 5-1.
Yeah, 5-1. Right. 5-1. Dr. Train ends up being also 5-1. And K-Star also 5-1. We all got 5-1 last week.
5-1, okay.
K-Star gave you the upset special, by the way. Let's keep it moving.
Yes, and I gave K-Star props on Twitter for that. That was a good call. That was
a nice upset call. I'm not even mad because it was Green Bay and they lost, and you know that makes me smile.
No, it was good. It was a good call. And had I more carefully about the whole hype of it, I probably wouldn't have been as surprised. But that was a great call. So I had to give K-Star a shout out on Facebook because that was a great call. All right, Week 6, we've got 4 games. And we will start with Cowboys going to Baltimore to play the Ravens. And since it's the Cowboys, of course, I will start. And really, everyone out there listening, all you have to do is listen to my analysis. You don't really listen to Train or K-Star on this one. But I'm going to tell you now the Cowboys are going to win this game, and I'm going to tell you why. First of all, the Cowboys have a lot of fans in the Baltimore area, a lot of fans down there. And so it's not going to be the hostile environment people think it's going to be. There's going to be a lot of Cowboy fans down there. And secondly, the Ravens defense is just not the Ravens defense. They're having a problem stopping the run. The Cowboys are determined to get the run. They're getting healthy. Costa's coming back. The Cowboys have had big offensive line issues this year. The third play of the game against the Giants, which I wanted to make that point earlier when our caller sent in the email, but the third play of the game, their starting center was knocked out and has been out, and he's finally coming back, Phil Costa. So I expect the offensive line to be much better than it's been, and I expect them to run the ball to set up the pass. And I really think that this is going to be it's amazing that people are giving the Cowboys almost no chance to beat the Ravens. On Yahoo, it's 88% Baltimore over Dallas, which is just amazing to me, but probably because they didn't look that good against the Bears. But I'm telling everybody right now, the Cowboys are not going to go down to 2-3. It's not going to happen. Last year, they went to 2-2 after 4 games, had a bye week. Tony Romo came in motivated to play, and Cowboys actually went from 2-2 to 8-4. And won some very impressive games. I expect the same thing this year. Go with the Cowboys. It's also my upset special of the week. Cowboys over the Ravens. Book it. K-Star.
Well, I kind of alluded to it earlier. The Cowboys, being the model of inconsistency that they are, will probably find a way to win this game and further just baffle everyone. I'm going to go with Dallas because the Ravens haven't been playing too well lately. I mean, yes, they're 4-1, but the game against the Chiefs was a 9-6 football game. That should not be the case against the Kansas City Chiefs. Dallas is coming off a bye week. They have a lot to prove. So I'm not going to lie, a lot of this is just hopefulness that the Cowboys beat the Ravens. I'm really pulling for Dallas here. seriously, like I am. Like, there's not really too many good explanations other than the Cowboys are all coming off a bye week and they're inconsistent. So the games you think they're going to win, they'll lose. And the games you think they'll lose, they'll win.
I'm so tired of you, Case. Call it like it is. You're a Steeler fan. You hate the Ravens, so you're putting your support behind the Cowboys. It's not because you're pro-Dallas. You just want the Ravens to lose. That's all it is. Just come right out and let's just call it like it is, okay? Let's just call it like it is. You want the Ravens to lose, so you're going to go.
Dallas is coming off a bye week.
And if the Cowboys lose, then you're going to come in next week.
I'm going to crush them. I'll crush them, absolutely.
Absolutely. You call the Cowboys a mile of inconsistency at 2-2, right? Mile of inconsistency at 2-2? Is that what you say?
The last 2 years, yes. Yeah. No. Not just the season. Look, it's not just the season. Come on. Don't be ignorant. You know what it's about.
I beg your pardon?
Don't be ignorant to what it is. You know, you watch the Cowboys. Come on. I'm not just talking about this year. I'm talking about the last couple of years, just the way they played.
Change year to year. I'm sorry. I didn't know you were cold.
No, it's not. Whoa. Stop, because it's the same story for the Cowboys every year, so I'm not really sure what you're talking about. There's just volumes of inconsistency. I'm picking the Cowboys. Please be happy with it. I'm not sure why you're arguing me on that. Honestly, if I pick the Ravens, maybe, but I'm not. So come on.
Since when did your picks affect my life? I don't care who you pick. I just want to be known why you're picking them. You're picking. It's a setup, and I'm not falling for the setup, okay? I'm not falling for it. You're not going to I was born that night but not last night. You're not going to get me with the setup of saying, oh, the Cowboys are going to win this game. They're coming to a bye week. Ravens are not looking that good. And then the Cowboys should lose, and they're not going to lose. But if they lose in the next week, T, your Cowboys suck. What did I tell you? This is what this is all about, everybody. I'm trying to tell you. So next week, when the Cowboys win, I don't want to hear a peep out of you, K-Star. I don't want to hear a peep out of you. Don't come back and say, I told you they was going to win. This is what I call a big gene move. Big Gene from Madden. This is a big Gene move. When his Eagles are playing well, he's like, I told you the Eagles were great. And when they suck, he's the first one. These Eagles suck. All right, this way no one can get at him. No one can say anything to him because he already beat you to the punch. That's what you're trying to do, beat me to the punch. I'm calling you out, K-Star. I'm calling you out. I just hope and pray that your Steelers don't choke Thursday night. That's all I got to say.
Oh, wow.
Strange.
Okay.
Wow.
This is by far one of the toughest to pick. I mean, it's kind of you can look at recent games and yeah, the Ravens gave up a lot of yards on the ground to Kansas City and got out of there with a nail biter. And you look at the Cowboys last game and it was horrific for them. And they are coming off a bye week, so the team has had time to rest and they're a little healthy. It's more of a, I mean, I know Yahoo has their percentages, but it's more of an evenly matched game to me. And with that said, I'm going to have to take the home team. I'm going to have to take the Ravens on this one.
All right. He's muted. Can't hear Train no more. He's muted. No, I'm just kidding. All right. Giants 3-2 go to San Francisco to play the Niners. We don't have our good friend Jedi Capricorn on to tell us how the Giants never lose to the Niners in San Francisco, but he actually does a show around Madden. He talks a little football, and so I actually called into his show Sunday night for a few minutes just to give him some support because he's been so supportive of our radio show, and he's very confident the Giants are going to win. Train, what do you think? Giants going to San Francisco?
Right now, man, I still like the Alex Smith not doing so much for his team led 49ers over the Giants. I like the way the Giants are playing ball. Consistent on defense, consistent on offense, and getting it done. So, Niners, man.
K-Star?
Going with the 49ers, they're at home. And also, as we remember last year in the NFC Championship game, the Niners lost off some muffed punts. I don't think we'll be seeing that. They have all the incentive to win this game because it's another game on their schedule, but it's not another game on their schedule, if you follow my drift. I'll go with the San Francisco 49ers. It's going to be a close game, but they're going to ink this one out.
Niners are going to win. The Giants aren't ready to play yet. You know, the Giants are going to lug along until about the last five or six games, and then they'll see where they're at and then decide whether they're going to turn it on or fold. That's just been there the way they, you know, you look back.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought they were 3-2. I didn't know we now referenced past seasons, Mr. Dallas Cowboy.
What are you talking about?
You know what I'm talking about.
What are you talking about?
When it's the Cowboys, it's, oh, let's not look at the past. Let's not look at last year. But once the Giants, oh, well, we've seen it with the Giants.
I'm about them being inconsistent when you were making your pick. Then you came back and said every year. And I was just comparing their record to your Steelers' record at 2-2. What's the problem with that?
We know. I see what you're saying. Go ahead.
What? Yeah, what? What?
My
point is, I'm talking about the Giants. You want to talk about the Cowboys? I'm talking about the Giants. My point is that they're not ready to play yet. And it's 3-2. And they won't turn it on until later in the season. And so the Niners are going to take this game. And they better take this game because we need to see the Giants go to 3-3. So it's also a homer. It's also a homer pick. I can admit that, unlike other people that are sitting on the call that can't admit homer picks. I can't. Homer pick them with the Lions.
Wow.
Packers at 2-3, traveling to Houston to play the Texans. And I have to say one thing. I have to say one thing against my Cowboys. I'm a little irritated. I'm a little irritated that this franchise, the Texans, that played their first game, inaugural game, against the Cowboys and won, are now the team of Texas. I'm not happy about that. Dallas should be irritated. Dallas should be pissed off. That's all I have to say. Packers 2-3 against the undefeated Texans. Let's start with Train on this one. I'm pretty sure who he's going to pick. But go ahead, Train. Homer.
Look, bro, okay, this is definitely partly a homer pick. Okay, all right, let's leave it at that. No doubt, I still think Green Bay is a competitive team, but Texans are playing some very good ball right now, and they're winning solid. They probably had maybe one of their toughest games of the season, maybe last night out of the Jets. So the Packers would bring it to them, but. You know, if this is in Lambeau, maybe I lean towards Green Bay, but this is definitely in Houston. So, yeah, I'm going with the Texans.
Going with the Texans, they might have been looking past the Jets last night and for two of that Packers-Texans game. The Packers have a lot of pass protection issues right now. I don't think Lincoln's J.J. Watt is really going to help that cause at all. I go with Houston. They're just too balanced, too good. We saw the Packers get run all over on by the Niners, and the Texans have a similar mold of a team. I'm going with Houston.
Yeah, this one scares me because I just think the Packers are and for this one, yes, I'm going history on this, that this team has just been such a good team for the last few years. It's hard for me to picture them going to 2-4. I just feel like something, you know, they just had an emotional loss because they were part of all that Chuck Pagano stuff. And it's hard for me to believe that they're going to go to 2-4. And it's hard for me to believe that the Texans, who are at 5-0 for the first time in their history, are going to go to 6-0. You know what? I just talked myself out of the Texans. I'm going with the Packers. I just can't. I just changed my pick. I just can't. I can't buy the Packers going down to 2-4. I just think they're too well coached, and they have too much talent. Even though they haven't been playing up to their normal level, and the Texans are due to lose. I mean, they're due. So I'm going to go with the Packers. Texans don't know how to be 6-0. They're not the Colts from Peyton Manning. They're not the teams that, you know, they're not the Patriots with Tom Brady. They're not, you know, they don't know how to be 6-0. So I'm going with the Packers. I'm just talking myself into the Packers. Sorry, Train. I'm going with the Packers on this one. Last but not least, Peyton Manning and the Broncos. Can he win with this team? Because Peyton's playing pretty well. And he's going to face Phillip Rivers and the Chargers in San Diego. K-Star.
Every time I pick the Denver Broncos, they've lost, but I think this is finally going to be the game they win. Look, the Broncos' defense has been playing pretty pathetic as of late. I think Peyton Manning's going to control the game a little bit more at the line of scrimmage, maybe check out the run, try to control the clock, do something to kind of control the game like he did in Indianapolis so often when he had bad defenses, because make no mistake about it, at this point in the season, the Denver Broncos are a bad defense. Phillip Rivers, good quarterback, but is underachieving as of late. Had a good game against New Orleans Saints defense, but while the Broncos defense have been bad, they're not that bad compared to the Saints. I want to go with Denver. I'm going to go with Peyton Manning getting the win before this bye week. to make them 3-3 Broncos.
Trey.
If any team can be inconsistent, it's definitely the San Diego Chargers. And I already picked Denver at the beginning of the season to get this division. And it's going to start with this game. So I'm going with Denver.
Yeah, I'm not a believer in the Chargers. I picked the Chargers to win last week and then changed my pick, thank God, and went with the Saints with all the emotion of Sean Payton and Loomis and all those being in attendance and something to really play for at home. I'm still not a believer in the Chargers. The Chargers, to me, are a team. People call them the AFC Cowboys, and what I will say is their coach is North Turner, and I know North Turner very well as a former offensive coordinator for the Cowboys, former Redskins head coach. To me, North Turner is like another Wade Phillips. He's never going to win a Super Bowl. The Chargers have the talent to go to the Super Bowl, and they've been once, but to go again and win. They have that level of talent, but they don't have the coaching. And I'm not saying that John Fox is head and shoulders above North Turner, but I will say that Peyton Manning is head and shoulders above Phillip Rivers. And they need this game at 2-3. You know, Peyton, he's hungry, you know, and he sat and watched his arch rival, beat him last week. And I can tell you, and this is what, I actually tweeted during the game that I hope Tony Romo is watching these two Hall of Fame quarterbacks. And everybody, if you don't have a Hall of Fame quarterback, you should hope your quarterback was watching these two, because neither one of these guys wanted to lose. And, you know, the Patriots jump out to the big lead, but the Broncos come back. And, you know, I mean, it was just, for football fans, that was a hell of a game to watch. And to watch these two technicians, these two quarterback masterminds, I mean, to watch two of the best to ever play the game, I mean, it was phenomenal to me. It was phenomenal. I enjoyed every play, every second of it. You know, it was just incredible. And I think, you know, he's going to now go into this game, and he's better than Phillip Rivers, period. And I think we're going to see the difference between Peyton Manning and Phillip Rivers and an underachieving Chargers team. 3-2 right now, but it's going to be – they're both going to be a 3-3. I got to go with the Broncos on this one. I think Peyton Manning's going to have a signature day in this one. All right. Dr. Train, final thoughts.
One, Dr. Train is leading in the Pickens, you know, with 19-9. Round of applause for Dr. Train. Way to go. He knows how to pick them. secondly, if there's one thing I enjoy about the Madden voice, it's Commiss T versus K-Star. Dude, if I was a listener, I'd just get on just to hear that. So, round of applause for that. I love you both, man. And lastly, don't forget, people, it is October. It is Breast Cancer Month.
Absolutely.
Wear pink. Get out and walk. The NFL players are wearing their pink. Support this thing. It's real. It is a fight. I mean, whoever you know that is going through it, they need your help, they need your prayers, they need your support. So let's keep that up this month.
All right. K-Star, final thoughts.
I just want to thank the NFL for being mindful that my birthday is tomorrow and giving me the gift that it's the Steelers football Thursday night, which is really cool. Me and Brett Favre share the same birthday. Shout out to Brett Favre. I'm still thinking about your buddy, miss watching you play football. But more importantly, shameless plug for me on my birthday tomorrow. At Ollie Quick, show me some birthday love. Let's get my followers up, and let's get the Steelers win Thursday night. Thank you, NFL. Thank you, Roger Goodell, for acknowledging that my birthday really is special.
How can such a big Madden star have only 316 followers on Twitter? Guys, give him some love, man. He got 316. That's pathetic. K-Star, you're a bigger star than that, man. You should have thousands
Absolutely.
Of followers, man. Okay, let's give K-Star some love. And a quick comment as far as Dr. Train goes, and listen to me and K-Star. You know what? Me and K-Star go back and forth, but he's my brother from another mother. I love him to death. We have a great time on the show. I enjoy going back and forth with him. Me and Dr. Train used to do this on the phone. And we just decided, instead of doing it on the phone, why don't we do it on the air? But we used to have, you know, hour, two-hour conversations going back and forth about football. So now we just took it to the air. So this is we're loving this. And as the show grows in popularity, it's just going to get better and better. And like I tell people all the time, if you like First Take, if you like Stephen A. and Skip, and those guys are good. I'm not gonna take nothing away from them. I just think we're better. I'm just saying we don't have any biases. And when I say biases, we are homers. Okay, that's okay. But we don't know these players. And we don't, you know what I mean? Like, we're not trying to befriend the players. And, oh, my God, if I say something bad, I'm not going to get an interview. And just
watch. You mean like Stephen A? You mean like Stephen A? Great friends with Allen Iverson. Great friends with Ray Lewis. Stephen A is the biggest name dropper I've ever heard. Actually, friend dropper. Let's just call him the friend dropper because that's what he does. And that's cute.
And let me tell you something. It's so funny when he'll start off and he'll say, well, let me start by saying I've got a lot of respect for, you know, such and such person. I know him. I've met his family. He's got a great family. He's a good guy. You know, I mean, we've had him here on the show. Who cares? You know, I had Larry Merchant on today, right? And Stephen A., whenever they have a guest, and it's a named guest, Stephen A.'s always got to jump in and say, that guest is a bad man. I've got a lot of respect. We know, Stephen A., you got a lot of respect for everybody. We get it, you know. And you know what? We're just fans. We don't know any of these people, okay? We don't know none of them, so we don't got to kiss their butt. So we can just say it as it is. We can just come right on and just call it like a T.I. is, okay? So anyway, on that note, let me thank Train. Let me thank Dr. Train. Let me thank K-Star. Let me thank Adam from Australia, the Outback, for his email. Hey, Adam, tell all your friends. Hey, Adam, you know what you need to do? You need to try to call it. I have no idea what time it is in Australia. I don't know what time it is, man, but set your alarm. Maybe we can get you to call into the show and we can have a conversation. And we would love to have you come in. Tell us a little bit about your homeland and then let's talk a little football. So see if you can make that happen. But anyway, on that note, for Commissioner G, for Dr. Train, for K-Star, for all the listeners, another great episode of the Madden Voice. We'll be back next Tuesday night at 8 o'clock. I might do a T-Bonics live sometime this week. We'll see. But if not, just come back next Thursday night. You'll see us. We're going to end the show with Misty Gonzalez and that song, Touchdown. Misty, thanks for allowing us to play your song. We hope you make $1 million on it. And if you do, I need a loan so that I don't be on the show called broke. All right, everybody, take care. And remember, the Madden Voice, where all feuds are settled on the field.